You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
I'm going to go ahead and start the podcast, then. I'm going to start recording the podcast. If we're already streaming, then why not?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, yeah, I did it while you were working out all the technical issues. That was, like, the fun. I mean, you want to give some lead-in so people can join the stream, which they did in droves, of course. Why are you blurry now? What's wrong, Dave?
No, nothing's wrong. I don't know. I feel like I'm very hot right now, so I'm just checking my own levels.
Oh, okay.
I think everything's fine. Everything's good.
I can't see...
You guys can still hear me fine, right? Like,
oh, yes, that's weird.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it was just like you looked clearer on the Twitch stream, but the Twitch stream is copying you off of my Discord, so it's impossible. But I think it's just because it was small. I don't know. It's fine. You just don't look as crispy clear as like
camera.
Me and Reese.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Me and Reese
tell.
Look beautiful and sharp.
And oh,
Dave
good.
Looks
yeah, because I don't even look that good on my version of me here.
Yeah, Alexa, I don't know. Let's not dwell on it.
Nah.
Let's move forward.
Let's get a little more brightness.
The video is secondary, I suppose.
I know. But I can get a
someday light. I'll actually upload them for people to do that business. Oh, Dave's gone.
No, I'm here.
I'm seems like a perfect happens. Time to start the podcast. All I see is like his springy cord. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very like, gravity for a second.
Like you're trying to get the phone receiver to your grandma in the next room is what it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Like, even my video feed that I see of myself live is choppy.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it
shitty.
Looks worse now.
Yeah, it's starting to look choppy here now. But how's your internet? Is it just
good times? Yeah, I don't think it's the internet. I think it's
okay.
I don't know.
It's okay. We'll deal with it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, honestly, I could do this. Be.
All right, still working on it. Ooh. Oh, what's this?
Yeah, this is my iPhone.
Oh. Okay, now he looks too good. Escape. We need to move back.
I know, yeah.
It makes my eye line very different, though, because it's
because
like
you're looking
up
above it. It's fine.
Yeah.
But. You look like you're about to rip some Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
Because, like, they all use iPhones, and they're, like, slightly below. Well, they use, like, a two... Oh, right. Camera mm-hmm. setup because there's well the pros you know there'll be one on the cards and one on the face
one on
but
the
it's
cards
very tight
one on the face
one on the cards one on the face
yeah this is gonna make my phone die though so
okay
there's no easy way we can just keep talking and my video is gonna constantly change I'm gonna cut between multiple angles on me it's gonna be great.
Yeah, this would be great. It'll come up, especially on the audio, as always. Hey, everybody, let's talk and stop concentrating on everything that's going wrong. This is Fat Gatsby's Triple Radio. This is Tim. That's Dave with the problems. And Weiss.
Yeah, none.
Problem-free Weiss.
Problem-free
Weiss. That's what they call me.
Yeah. We were like...
Yeah, you get your... I can't not look at Dave's weird angle. Like, it's a great camera. It's just...
Sorry.
So when you said your phone was gonna die, did you mean 5 minutes into the podcast? I said, yeah.
No, I just plugged it in, and that's what made it go all blurry for some reason.
You're able to just plug it into your computer, and then it goes.
You it was not even plugged in before. It was I was just doing it over Wi-Fi, and it goes.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the Apple ecosystem.
All right. Yeah. Well, I guess it's good for something.
I know. My phone is my webcam. If I need a camera in my vocal booth for a live session, sometimes if they need to look at me, my iPhone is the best wireless webcam.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Yes. That makes all kinds of sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Ignore me. Just don't.
I was like.
It.
Yeah, we did our big top 10 game thing last month, so we haven't talked about normal stuff in a couple months. It was funny because I can't pay attention to what Dave's doing.
Don't bother. I'm in my own world. I'm listening to you. I am paying attention.
There we go. There was
all
the
right,
stuff.
There we are. Yep.
Perfect. Yeah, we were, that's a big jet fire back there.
He is. That's Masterpiece, Jeff.
Nice. God damn.
He's way out of proportion to everybody else.
Oh, yeah. But but he's supposed to be big, but that is very, very large.
That is very big.
Very big back there. We jumped the gun on June because we were like, oh, let's do E3 stuff and talk about the Switch 2 because the end of June's crazy. And then, you know, July went off without a hitch. And then we're like talking about when to record this episode because, boy, the end of August gets crazy. And then it was like, oh, wait, we're all free tonight. Let's go. Here we are.
Yeah, this was hastily thrown together. But you know what? I'm glad we're here.
Same. No, it's a I have a very packed week, but the Sunday Mondays kind of depend. Like, I don't know until about like 48 hours or less beforehand. No. So this was like, especially the Mondays.
I mean, like next week, my child is at my parents' house, which frees up some evenings. But one of them I'm working overtime, and another I think I have to go do something. And then it's like, oh, I would like to spend the other two with my lady wife, because we do not get to do much of that without the child around.
Oh man,
we don't get to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we try.
Yeah, I want it. What
we had, like many select days over the past month where we had no children in the house because they were both gone, and we did not avail ourselves of that time at all. Like, it always got to like the last day when that happens. It's like, what are we gonna do? I don't know. Let's just get in the car and see what happens.
Nah.
And then, we saw the Naked Gun. We'll talk about that when we
God
talk about
damn it.
Movies.
See, yeah, that's
we
what will. I want.
See,
that's what I'm going to be doing next week when my child is gone. I think we're going to go see the Naked Gun.
There you go. That's great.
You got some choices.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say see Naked Gun. But.
Yeah, I think that's what we're. I have seen more movies than I have ever seen for one of these episodes. I feel like for this one, I have tons of movies. I was sick. For like all of July, including when we recorded the top 10. Including when we recorded the top 10, it was like barely under control. That was like fairly early on in the situation where. So it was like I was off the first. I don't know why it's like acting up right now. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Touch the old. I have a little that's left. I had like one day that knocked me out, and then the rest was fine, but it's still like in the chest.
Yeah, I had a cough that it was just kind of like the second week of July started up on me. It's like, oh, I have a cough, and this is clearly sickness related. And then like by the Friday of afternoon of that week, I'm like, yes, I am sick. I can tell I am sick, but it was, and I was sick pretty much that whole weekend. I skipped a soccer tournament. To stay home and rest. But it was weird just because like my throat felt like a gravel road. And there was like otherwise no phlegm, which is not something I've ever really dealt with. Usually it's like if I have a sore throat, it's accompanied by, you know, buckets of gunk. But this was just like, my throat just feels awful. Just absolutely horrible, terrible. With the doctor, and they're like, oh, you're just sick. It'll clear up in a few days. And then like a week later, I'm like, this is not clearing up. And they're like, here's antibiotics. And then it started to clear up. But still, like, and then I think after that, I might have gotten like a little bit of a normal cold, because then I was kind of like gross and phlegmy. And that was like my whole July. And then it like turned into August, and I'm like, God, what happened to my fucking summer just now? Not that I really get to do anything with it because I work, but it was still just like,
boo.
That was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Summertime sicknesses are the worst. It doesn't feel fair. I'm kind of surprised.
It's common for me.
Gotten sick yet. My kids have been like indoors with other kids doing nothing but theater camps all summer, and they have not brought anything home. They have not brought any illnesses home. Nice. Like, it's kind of a miracle.
Yeah. See, that's the because they're staying around kids, and they're not going to get like hit with a megaton shot in the face in September.
Yeah.
When the pool comes back together.
Yeah. Building up those immune systems, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Somehow. But yeah, well, I guess we can talk about the Naked Gun, and I cannot say anything for a little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
I knew it. I knew you guys were going to see it. I'm just like, I was
going to see that immediately. Yeah. Well, the second that people are like, it's actually good, I was like, oh, I'm going to go see it.
Yeah, I tried to like, I was just, no, it was just not happening.
Well, I've been listening to the Lonely Island and Seth Meyers podcast. And so we hear a lot of talk from director Akiva Schaffer about working on the Naked Gun and doing promotion for the Naked Gun in the most recent episodes. So it's been on my radar for a long time because I really like those Lonely Island guys and I really like their films. And I'm always looking forward to an Akiva Schaffer joint. And Weiss, I think it's safe to say that, boy, did he make a Naked Gun movie.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Like, I wasn't so, like, I have not listened to that podcast. In that ecosphere, I listened to Amy Poehler's, but not all of them.
Oh, yeah, Jan started
which is, like, close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. But, as I said, I didn't love the trailer, but there was enough in the trailer that I'm just like, okay, I'm curious. But then once people were like, oh no, it's a joke fest, like it is literally machine gun comedy, like
joke,
it is a style of comedy that we do not get often at all, like even removed from like the Zazz, the Airplane, you know, like the Zucker style, like we just don't get straight comedies that often, because it used to be a safe bet, but the second that we opened up from the US to global, you can't do like verbal comedy.
Yeah.
Like it has to be, even it's as visual slapstick. As this is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I, you know, that's if there's a comedy, especially a comedy by someone that I know, you know, so Akiva, the Lonely Island movies, Hot Rod and Pop Star, are comedies that I love. And after Pop Star was really at the very tail end of when it was possible to get a studio comedy financed. Even then, it was a long shot, I think.
I will say I was late to both, and I don't love either. I respect that people like really like those, but I have no desire to go back to either one of them. I like Bash Brothers way more than Pop Star.
I gotta watch Bash Brothers again. I love Bash Brothers, and I love Chippendales Rescue Rangers. You know, so
I love Chippendales.
Yeah. So I'm like, Akiva Schaffer can do a licensed property or a legacy sequel. Like, he is clearly up to the task, and he can like make it his own and infuse it with their style of comedy. So I will say this. Akiva Schaffer, I feel, really, really made a Zucker Brothers comedy. And I did not find it very funny. And I'm okay with that.
I loved it way more than all of the ones that we listed.
Wow, really?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, Chippendales was very good. Hot Rod, I just did not think was funny. And Pop Star, like, it might have just been the style of music I'm just not into. As much as I like Lonely Island, I just did not like the music in that.
Oh, yeah. It's my least favorite of their music, because it all has to be in that style.
It's so specific. But, this one was working for me. I mean, it was, I unfortunately don't get to see with like huge audiences. So it was only like four or six of us.
It was a small crowd when we went to see it too.
Like front to back, like there was a section that lulled, but for the most part, I was into what they were doing. Like, obviously, like, you have to compare Liam Neeson with Leslie Nielsen, and like one is funnier than the other. But I think that they smartly played into who we see Liam Neeson as you know, the modern action star.
Yeah, yeah.
Like playing off that stock. And
keep going.
We were going to talk about that too. Yeah, but I think it was Life's Too Short, the Ricky Gervais show that had the Liam Neeson bit in it. It was closest to that. It was when he was doing that riff on like, I want to do a comedy. I want to do an improvised comedy. I think it will be very funny. Just like straight face, like murder face, talking about comedy.
Well,
kind of thing. To
that point, I got to have a visit this week with our old high school classmate, Dave Meyer. And his feeling about Liam Neeson's casting was, while he appreciates the idea, he felt that Liam Neeson has already had ample years worth of subverting that stereotype about him, that he is very serious and straight-faced. Like, he's already sort of been, you know, purposefully comedically undermining that for at least a decade now. And so
But who are you going to cast?
Well, yeah.
Like, right now. Yeah, like, exactly. Like, I can't think of anyone better. That's the thing. It's like, yeah. Because it was John Hamm for a long time, and John Hamm does great comedy.
Yeah.
But no, he knows that it's a joke too well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you need, it's like, you're not casting Liam Neeson. Like, you want, like, that Robert Stack in Airplane.
Yes. Yeah.
More than anything. Yeah. You know? Which, I mean, maybe Brian Cox, maybe something like that. But, like, again, getting them to do it. Like, I think one of the things that helped was learning how, like the Pam Anderson, Liam Neeson, like, hooking up on the set and then, like, watching the movie going, like, yeah, I can see that. Like, oh, they actually do have chemistry.
Yeah, they really do.
It's crazy great. Chemistry.
Yeah.
And bringing it back to, like, you know, the two competitive 90s icons, Pam Anderson did a better job than Anna Nicole Smith. it was just really funny that she kind of replaced. I know, the other person that I can't think of the name of right now that she replaced in the first one. But yes.
Presley, right?
Presley. Yeah. Priscilla Presley.
Priscilla, yeah.
Who had a very quick cameo in there. But yeah.
Oh, she did?
Yep. Yeah, she was she was like a reaction shot. Like, it was kind of silly that they only did it for like a second, but yeah. I think in like the last bit. But,
okay.
But yeah, transition to our friend Z worked on, animated one of the best gags in the movie.
I heard that her scene was very funny.
I'm delighted that everyone is talking about friend of the show, Lindsay Briggs. Her puppetry as a snowman is kind of the extended scene that steals the movie. It was my favorite scene personally, because to me, it felt like it came closest to the reason I came to the movie, was hoping that it would have a little more Lonely Island influence.
Oh, see, that's what worried me the most.
Your expectations were fulfilled and mine were
disappointed. It's a weird line to like pull off.
Oh, totally.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, and again, I'm just, whenever a comedy is even like that level, I'm happy. I'm thrilled to go out and like,
yes,
I'm hoping that that it proves that like they can make the problem is they'll take the wrong lessons and just, you know, like find things to license off of or whatever.
My main takeaway,
Walter Hauser was a good version of
I would have loved I wanted to see a bit more physical comedy from him. I wish that there was
I can see that.
Even more of that.
For sure.
I guess I will say that even though the movie, like, at best merely made me chuckle, I know that just like the original Naked Gun movies, this will be some 14-year-old boy's favorite comedy and will be the thing that inspires some young people to get into comedy. Like,
I hope so. Or to make this specific type of movie, too. Even listening to, I don't know if either of you listen to the popular podcast Blank Check, but they're going through Coen Brothers and they're up to Hudsucker right now.
Oh, wow.
And like Hudsucker being one of those movies, it's just, which is just a straight up Preston Sturges, like 1940s, like fast talking comedy, which the Zucker brothers are kind of that in like a physical sense. Like they're not, but they're influenced by. It's definitely like, it's such a distinct marker in like the comedy landscape. Like I think like the one thing I wanted out of the movie was at least an attempt to do a Zucker style in camera visual gag. Like, you know, Top Secret has the underwater fight, Airplane has the mirror gag, you know, a lot of them have like those just playing with perspective things. They didn't even like, they probably went, nope. Like, it's, it might be a bad idea. Maybe they tried one and it just did not work because they're insanely hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I was curious if they were going to give it a shot. But that's the baggage of doing a franchise versus an original movie too.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Yes. Like, I don't blame Akiva Schaffer for making the movie that he did, because this is definitely for anyone that is going to see, who's going, anyone going to see this movie to see a Zucker Brothers style Naked Gun movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it is, exactly what it says on the tin. So, yep. You know, yeah. I get, my expectations were probably unreasonable.
I mean, reasonable. I don't know.
Than going to see a Naked Gun movie and getting exactly that. It's a way more reasonable expectation.
I think it's silly when, like, audiences evaluate the marketing. Like, I was just going to say, like, they sold it way more on the name Naked Gun than from the makers of Lonely Island.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
I can think of. Yeah.
Well, I think which they is know where kind the money of interesting.
On it, we'll ask somebody under like 35, though, you know, like, I don't know. That feels kind of risky to me.
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no,
but again,
right.
I'm
you're
terrible
right.
at I money.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Tim, go see it.
I have anything else, but yeah, get some opinions. See what you think.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Weiss.
All right. Yeah, what other movies?
Yeah, have you seen Warriors?
Warriors.
Yeah, weapons? The
original Warriors?
Weapons, yeah. That one. That's what I meant to say. Weapons.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry. Weapons. No, I have not seen
my
Weapons
bust.
Yet.
Okay.
I have not yet seen Weapons either. No.
Okay.
No, yeah. I
what is it?
I was one of those people that wasn't as high on Barbarian, so I wasn't like rushing out to, but everybody has been loving Weapons, so
yeah, everyone's talking about
will.
It. What it and it, yep. It's for a streaming
don't
service,
tell me
right?
What, yeah.
What's that?
It what? Was made for a streaming service, right?
No, it's theaters.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it just came out. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
I just thought the trailer looked weird as hell, and I was wondering.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you had seen it.
No, I have not seen it. Yeah. No.
No, I have plenty of people raving about it. It's just like, it's a tricky line. It's, Dave, it's if you had ever seen The Whitest Kids You Know, the sketch
have.
Group. I only saw a little bit of it. Like it, and again, it wasn't one that like I see why people like glommed onto it. It just wasn't the one that I got obsessed with. But it is they're the ones that made Barbarian and Weapons. Now I'm trying not to say Warriors.
Thanks, Tim.
But well the thing this it's that thing with Barbarian. I'm sure Weapons has something to this degree, but Barbarian was very much people are like a thing happens and it's crazy. So then I watch the movie and a thing happens and it's crazy. And I go, yeah, like a crazy thing happened. And it doesn't really like shock me sort of thing. But different people, different expectations at times on that stuff. Sure, and again, a lot of people here. Enjoyed that one too. But
yeah. All right. But, anyways, I guess let's talk about movies we have seen instead.
Yeah, I was going to say.
There's plenty of those. Way on like a month ago, Richard's choice of movie to go see in the theaters was Elio, the Pixar joint that like nobody went to see.
Yeah,
including me, I did not see it.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, it's I'll take this any day over. Well, you know, it's better. Mm-hmm. I didn't care for you know Inside Out 2 was like okay, you know, Elements was like okay. And
did not see Elements.
You didn't miss anything, in my opinion. But no, this I thought it was enjoyable. It's not long at all. It's good kids movie. Just silly, fun, interesting, creative stuff. It's not like a all-time Pixar banger, but
heard animation again, much like Elemental, was very good.
Yeah, it's very good. You can always count on them for that.
Yeah,
it's just like their stuff looks good. But this, yeah, I had some good. Part to it
on the kids movie theme, did you see the K-pop Demon Hunters yet?
I have seen K-pop, you know, I have not seen K-pop Demon Hunters from end to end, but I have seen that movie so many times.
I have not had that. I've listened to the soundtrack more than I expected, but
yeah, that too.
Yeah. No, I was pleasantly surprised. It was like,
yeah.
I mean, I love that genre. The mm-hmm. fucking, you know, Music is Magic, Josie and the Pussycats, Gem and the Holograms, anything like mm-hmm. that. You're using music to fight a thing. Wild Zero, whatever mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Yeah. Guitaru Man. Music, yeah.
Yeah. Guitaru Man. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Richard watched that like the second, like the probably the day it came out, and then he just kept watching it.
That seems engineered to do that.
yeah, it's and to be sure, like I think it's great. Like it's an
yeah,
I think it's an absolute. Dave, have you seen it or no?
I'm excited to finally get to see it. So here's the thing: yeah. my mm-hmm. girls yeah. are very aware of sort of the
yes.
cultural baggage that comes with being a total weeb and have kind of decided that anime is not for them because of that. They're like, I'm just not that person. And so because of that, really I think they anime. Are.
No, it's not. Yeah.
Well, I know. Yeah. I know. But it's yeah, that's yeah. you it's, see that and that's what they equate it to. And they're like, yeah. oh, no, I don't think that's the kind of thing I'd be into. I think they miss out on a
they're
lot
fools. Yes.
with that attitude. But K-pop Demon Hunters specifically has been getting so talked about and in such glowing terms that they're finally starting to be like, Dad, have you heard about this movie K-pop Demon? Like, it sounds really good. I think we should watch it. Like, they're, yeah. they're,
and
they're
I'm such a contrarian that it was the that's what kept me from watching it for like a bit, where it was just sort of like, oh, it's the top of Netflix forever. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
maybe it's yeah. Sawed off the edges a little too much.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, no, you know, you need to watch it now because it's already a thing that Netflix is going to like put the machine behind and start like pumping yeah. out multiple sequels. And like I saw like they want, you know, live action possibility and like, yeah. you know, more of version that I'm sure like different cultural version. They're going to mm-hmm. run this into the ground like yeah. they did with Squid Game.
Get ready for the Halloween costumes.
Yeah, get ready for that.
It's so close.
Get ready yeah. for the Funko Pops. It's going to be an insane thing because
yeah.
it's just kind of funny watching that ramp up to just Netflix being like, oh, people like it. Oh, they yeah. like it. And then it must have crossed like a certain metric for them. And they're like,
oh, yeah,
pull the trigger. Yep. It's like you go to the freaking Netflix merch page. They have like 180 items on there. Like, just go nuts. We'll print yeah. it. We'll make it an order. Here you go. Go for it. But anyways,
I was going to say like
itself.
The movie itself. Yeah. No, the actual like direction and action is like solid, like
yeah.
way better than I expected.
Yeah, it's really yeah, it's so fun to watch. Like yeah. I love how, you know, goofy it is, and that it just the, you know, the villainous Saja boys, like it's mm-hmm. all so silly with them.
Yep,
like from when they pop up with their with the soda pop song. And
yes.
all their interactions with the actual demon hunters and the ridiculousness with the cat and then the big climax. Like, it just all works mm-hmm. so well in, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. And the music is insanely good.
Right.
You're just, like, so earwormy and addictive.
And again, like, as somebody who, you know, I never got into... Like, boy bands are not a style of music that has ever really caught me. So yeah. K-pop is usually not. K-pop is a little more narrow of a focus. I feel like J-pop has been fine because all of that's filtered from the same shit that video game music is. Yep. You know, it's the same Japanese jazz fusion from T-Squared, et cetera, influences. But K-pop is like, it is pop.
Yeah.
But it works. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we haven't mentioned a Superman.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we definitely did not talk about that since the last time we discussed movies in the podcast. So, yeah.
No.
Did everybody see it?
I believe everybody's seen it by now.
Yeah. I saw it twice.
Okay, good. Yep, same.
Only once for me, so I guess I'll sit this one out.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't have anything relevant to say, because I didn't say it to see it twice. Yeah.
No, as I alluded to, I saw my first 4DX the second time with Superman.
Oh.
And yeah, it It was like, I would recommend IMAX. Like, I didn't see IMAX, but I would say if you're splurging, go to IMAX first, like rather than the 4DX. But there was, I will give a spoiler disclaimer here. All right. For Superman. There is that moment when Superman's in the cell and Lex has the food vendor out there.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Like, that moment is the best use of 4DX because, like, that Ooh. Happened and there was a whoosh of air that just went by my ear and I was just Ooh. Like, oh, holy shit.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was just like, that was brutal.
Well, that, yeah, that moment's really good because that definitely elicits a reaction because you think that scene is going to go on and then it just doesn't.
Yep, exactly.
It ends abruptly.
Yeah. No, I mostly really liked it. Like,
yeah, me too. I liked how they skipped the first 40 minutes of the movie and just got right to it.
Yeah.
I like how, and this is compliments to Fantastic Four as well, and that we're both those movies were like right around Superman's was still my favorite of the two, but they're both good. Little bit of a superhero movie renaissance here this summer, in my opinion.
Wow. I haven't heard seen as much good on Fantastic Four. So
I've seen three in a row that I liked. I thought I heard, most people I've talked to have liked Fantastic Four. That we're out of this idea where these movies have to be 3 fucking hours long every single time. Yep. I am done with that shit. It just makes it long. Like, all of the Snyderverse movies were so ponderously long. And the Marvel movies for a while too. It was just like just dragging onwards. But yeah, okay, here's a just like we're gonna get into it. Like, you know, Superman on Earth, like Lex Luthor has already been doing machinations for a couple years now, and we're just gonna catch you up when we need to. There's other superheroes. There they are. It's all, you know, you already know like this stuff. And we don't need to do this again.
Yeah, it felt like it treated the audience a little smarter, obviously, because like Superman is the oldest comic or oldest superhero, not comic, but you know, he's from Krypton, you know, Ma and Pa Ken, you don't have to introduce this stuff. So it feels nice when they're like, oh, yeah, you know, he has a Fortress of Solitude. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know that.
You know, he has a thing that he's weak against called kryptonite. And this guy's a dumbass for just calling it kryptonite. I like how the movie was woke a little bit. That's always good. just like,
well, you know, it has to have an opinion. Like, you can't not. Like, it's literally, yes.
Well, it made it so much more interesting to have like kind of a real world conflict parallel like, you know, Superman's struggle in the movie is against like, well, how would Superman handle this kind of very familiar conflict, you know?
Right.
In governments and politics and all that shit.
And I will say I might have felt differently before I worked like 4.5 years at like a tech job. But at this point, like tech villains, especially what they did with Lex in this one, I'm just like, yeah, like it's so dead on. And it works so well. It's just it's slimy. He has the arrogance to stand up to sip coffee in Superman's face and whisper taunts and such.
Yeah.
Like I thought Nicholas Holt did like an amazing job with balancing that. Yeah.
Just knocking over the pencils and then knocking them over immediately just to be petty.
Oh, that's so funny. So funny. Yeah.
And I also like how the movie was corny.
Yes.
You know, they didn't try to make Guy Gardner cool. It's just like, DC Universe is, you know, superheroes in general are kind of corny and like Marvel does so much work or did so much work. Just like everything has to be kind of cool and slick and whatever. And this is like, it's kind of dumb. Like Superman's going around saving squirrels. That's his priority. And
dude, that was that,
all over the place.
Especially the first time. I mean, like it is such a like almost tropey thing to say, but like it wasn't that he saved the squirrel. It's the way that they did that shot. That I was just like, that just, it felt right. Like it was, obviously, we all saw it, but they didn't draw a ton of attention on it. He just saved a squirrel, and you're like, yeah, he's Superman.
I'm honestly surprised at any pushback about that existed because it felt so, it did feel so natural in the moment. Like, no, that's where this is heading. Of course, that's what he's doing. He's saving the innocent. Like,
yep. Versus, and again, I skipped all of the Supermans from Superman 4 up to now. Like, I skipped all the Snyder stuff. I did not see Returns. I did not, which.
Oh, you saw Returns. You never saw Returns? Not. I thought we all went to see it together.
Huh. No, I missed that one.
Oh.
Yeah. And I never felt like going back. Like, yeah. I guess. Though I heard more positive on that one than the one after, than Man of Steel. But Man of Steel was the one that, I believe when it came out, was that the one that, like, was opposite Avengers, Age of Ultron, because Age of Ultron, it took a second to have the heroes, like, saving people, whereas Superman was doing, like, collateral damage and not caring. Yeah. Like, I remember it being juxtaposed back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that was years apart, but it maybe was shortly after Avengers 1.
Okay,
but
maybe
it was definitely
Man
of Steel that, like,
yes,
yes, it was.
No, I know that was Man of Steel.
It was like the year after the first Avengers, you know.
Gotcha.
When they're going out of their way to save everyone in New York City,
exactly. Yeah.
Having the freedom to make a Superman story instead of feeling like you have to make the Superman story means that you get to dive into the stuff that makes Superman an interesting character. When you're bogged down with the responsibility of having to produce, this is the definitive story of Superman, that's when you have to retread all the stuff that everybody knows. And when you just leverage the existing cultural familiarity with the most iconic superhero ever, then that frees up your space to tell just a story about him as a person.
Yeah, that's what I'm, that's kind of what I'm hoping. And, you know, I don't have opinion on Fantastic Four yet, but the spot that Marvel has been knocked off their high horse at the moment, now you don't have to define things. You just have to make a good movie.
Yeah.
So make a good movie. And you know, like, that's like Homecoming. Homecoming was the first of those three with the Tom Holland, right?
Yep.
That's why that felt so good, because it was just sort of like, it was just a Spider-Man movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it was way smaller than everything that was around it at the time. Even though this is not a small movie. But it doesn't feel like it's leading you in a direction.
It had
like a wonderful moment on the farm. Like, I could have had way more of Ma and Pa Kent.
Though
I'm glad they didn't, like, that might be my favorite, like, of the Kents. Like, that scene on the bench was so good.
Oh my God, that was so good.
Yeah.
I
like her yelling into the phone. Just,
oh yeah, that was hilarious.
I guess part of that smallness, I will admit that small. I did feel the smallness. I did feel that, like,
okay,
you know, I'm not walking away from this movie going, wow, that really took my breath away, because it was not this huge epic. It was just a really personal story about who is this guy and what are his moral priorities. But I will also say that the characterizations of Supes, Lois, and Lex, while they did not align with the image of those characters I have in my head, because everyone has experienced a different iteration of these characters, you know, for some people... Mm-hmm. I know for older film going audiences, obviously, any Lex Luthor that is not sort of a bumbling Gene Hackman is not going to be, you know, and in what, you know, my Lex Luthor, for better or worse, is Clancy Brown.
Yes. No, 100%. Same.
And my Superman is Tim Daly. You know, it's this. I mean, for me.
No, I think I'm still Christopher Reeve on the Superman.
Yeah.
I think, like, and I really love what they're doing with Lois Lane on My Adventures with Superman. Like,
I gotta start watching that show.
One of my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very different, like, Lois. Like, it is, if I'm being nitpicky, because I was happy to enjoy the movie, but, like, The one thing I do think they could have given Lois a little more time. I think what I wanted was them to show, because they did a lot of telling that she is punk, and they had like the scene with the sugar, but I wanted to like see her punkness to rub against Superman's a little
bit. That's a great way to put it. Yep. Did a lot of telling and not enough showing. Yep.
Yeah. Just on that though, but like performance was still good. Like their chemistry is still like right there. So
still
excited to see what they did. Like one of the best things I could say about it is afterwards, I was just like, oh my God, he's going to meet Robert Pattinson's Batman. Like, and that's exciting. Or if, you know, a Flash shows up, that's not Ezra. Yeah. That's exciting. You know, like it reminded me of if they keep it up and keep all of these movies separate, it could be that same excitement as like the first round of Marvel, you know, like phase one leading to Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whereas like the Snyder problem was like every movie felt like that. Yeah. So they cross over and you're like, okay.
I mean, Man of Steel. And then it was like, okay, we're going to do Batman, you know, crossover with Batman, even though you have never seen this Batman before. And now we're going to do the Justice League. And then we'll get back to Aquaman and Flash and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess here's the other thing that felt incongruous to me, but I will totally allow it because it works for the sake of the movie. And again, maybe the incongruity here is just that it doesn't align with my mental image of Superman. And, you know, James Gunn is under no obligation to match my mental image of Superman, certainly. But that first that the movie opens with this argument that he has with Lois, where he honestly comes off looking super clueless. It works for the movie because it gives him room to grow and learn as a character and as a person, but it also is it's incongruous for me to see Superman while acting according to his own moral code, you know, regardless of the nuances of the situation that his girlfriend rightly points out to him. But also like that it's him getting angry and frustrated with that. That's what felt incongruous to me. But again, you know, those sort of like college frat boy vibes, maybe not frat boy, but like college football star vibes.
Well, I will grab the word boy, because I feel like that's like you describing it as like, yeah, I guess like that fight feels like kind of like if they were doing a younger Superman like story.
Yeah.
Whereas like we're implying like he's old hat at this point, sort of thing. Or at least
it's been 3 years.
Year two, year three.
Yeah. The masterfully brisk exposition, like perfect and poetic. And so, like we can assume that this is, you know, if this is Superman year three, then sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a younger, more inexperienced Superman. And again, that's fine. And it did strike me as odd and like made it a little harder for me to get on his side. But, you know, at least at first.
No, that's
but
fair.
Again, it's fine and works for the movie, gives him room to grow. he grows and develops as a person and you know, by the time he gets to the, you know, it's just a dog, but he's alone. He's probably scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yep.
That's like, oh, shit, man.
Right? Mm-hmm. I know. No, I like, know. That's, because I was similarly worried, and I wasn't, like, putting my finger on, like, that portrayal, like, early on. But, like, it just came off as, like, he's Superman. He's just kind of like frustrated with he's just slightly annoyed with the things.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a bad dog, you know, like he's got a great dog, but he's got a bad dog. You know, he's, you know,
it's his cousin is kind of a pain in the ass. Like she's different.
His cousin's kind of a pain in the ass. Yeah. Like these Americans and you know, like I like that, especially versus like where his parents' message kind of goes. And honestly, like the only like talking point of the movie, like some people were kind of like didn't love like the harem thing, as a joke. And like I liked it in it. It might have maybe there was a more eloquent way to do it, but like the way these misunderstandings tend to go is like this over sexualization, and I'm just sort of like that felt kind of like it was sensational in a news cycle kind of way.
Oh, to yeah, me. Totally. Like, they have
to, you know.
Well, I think it directly, like, as much as James Gunn has to publicly, you know, distance himself from any verisimilitude to the Israel-Palestine conflict, like, right. The word harem evokes Islamophobia.
Yes.
And I think it's mm-hmm. you know, yes, it's good and provocative for him to put it in there and have that be a thing that white Americans are like, oh, that makes him weird and alien and that others him, you know?
Yep. No, I agree. Even it's funny just like on the meta sense thinking about when they wrote this, because like I'm guessing it was written much more to be Ukraine, Russia, and then.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if this was written three, 4 years ago,
provided a better metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then some slight adjustments here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought Mr. Terrific was really good.
Oh, my yeah. gosh.
Yeah. No wonder he's going to be the breakout star here. He's great.
Yeah. Scene stealer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gets the big job. Like, you know, oh, here's the character with the, you know, that you yes. didn't know you liked. And there's good. We're going to play a song behind it and he's going to tear up everybody. I mean,
clearly, you know, a Michael Rooker scene with he might as well yes. have been whistling, but
yes,
I love it in Guardians and I love it in this, so I don't.
Yeah, sure, go care. For it. It's great. Yeah, just waiting for his garage yeah. door to open. Very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. No, he's so good about like even though like there's. There's the things that, like, James Gunn always does, and you're worried about it feeling kind of samey, but, like, he's so good at just, like, defining those characters, and it's satisfying when they come together. It's always satisfying when they come together.
Yeah.
Mr. Element Element or Elemental, I don't remember. I think it's Elemental, right? But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Elemental, but, like, yeah. coming in and all that stuff, but, yeah. Did either of you see 28 Years Later by chance?
Nah.
I've actually never seen any of those movies for which I was like Ooh. Severely chastised by a friend.
She's
like, your homework is to go home and watch all those movies.
Well, I mean, Days is really good.
Yeah. I never saw Weeks.
Weeks yeah. and Weeks is, nope. they did it. Yeah, it's again and not as effective.
Yeah. and it's not Danny Boyle and Alex yeah. Garland.
And also, I was like, drive-in theater yeah. had really dark projectors.
Anyway. Yeah, well, the thing. Well, part of the reason you might not have seen 28 Days is because, like, it was purposefully shot lo-fi. So, like, when it came time for things like streaming, there wasn't a good copy of it. Like, it's a very rare streaming movie. Now they did do a 4K release. I'm curious about it. I've heard that it does keep the feel intact, but really you should watch that thing on like a paper shredder. Like it has a very specific, like it was, Tim, I don't know if you felt the same way, but it was super cathartic as like the movie that kicked off like horror post 9/11.
Oh yeah.
Whereas mm-hmm. because it's a brutal movie, but it's an optimistically brutal movie. Mm-hmm. Like like they changed, or you know, they chose the ending that they chose for a reason mm-hmm. in the first yeah, movie yeah. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Years Later is it's like one kind of like what we were talking about, it's not as like big and bombastic and like feels like it has to live up to the other two movies. They're just sort of like, oh, we have a story to tell with these workings in this modern time. There are, you know, obviously it is in that world, but it is pretty contained to certain amount of characters. Danny Boyle is still really, really good with a soundtrack. Like, and it's, yeah, it's just kind of a, you know, we're an insulated community. When you're a certain age, you go out and I'm a father, you're a son, I'm going to teach you, and then it doesn't go where you think it's going to go. And
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. 28 yeah. weeks went exactly where I thought it was going to go.
I was going to say, yeah, I can only talk about years on this one. Yeah.
Well, I'm just, that was like the problem with the movie. It was just kind of mm-hmm. like they had if I'm recalling correctly, I only saw it the one time. It was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, we have this, you know, small place we're living and like, you know, we're good. Like they're all out there and we're good. And then guess what? They get in there and then it all just falls apart. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much how I expected this to go. Okay. So
this is kind of the opposite of that. Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Now we're talking.
And, and you get, obviously not until you see it, but Ralph Fiennes does an amazing job, I feel like, for someone who comes in not at the beginning of the movie and just kind of like goes, this is mine now. I'm just going to take this. but yeah, definitely recommend. And it's, you know, it's all shot on iPhone, but it's also with professionals that know how to get the most out of it. Like, it's gorgeous, like, for being shot on an iPhone, but for a movie in general, like, obviously they have things besides the phones to enhance it. It's kind of a misnomer when people are like, it's shot on a phone, you picture one person running out. Not so much, but it is strikingly beautiful in a way that is different, but also evokes like that lo-fi running out with a camera that like the first one had. In a way, so like that thematically, like, really was fun to see that tied in. And also people, I will say, yourselves, just brace yourself for the opening scene is pretty brutal. After that, it you know, mileage will vary, but I don't think Lauren can handle this.
She's not interested in her bag at all.
No. good. Yeah, really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Well, let me talk about Fantastic Four, which I liked. Yeah. I didn't like it as much as Superman, I'll just say. But I mean, I liked Superman quite a bit. But it, you know, you could say a lot of the same things. They say they skipped the first 40 minutes of the movie. Yeah. Like, you know, it opens with the Fantastic Four coming out on that talk show, and they're talking about like all the stuff the Fantastic Four have done.
The hardest thing this movie has is to separate itself from The Incredibles, and The Incredibles opens with Mr. Just saying.
yeah, it does.
Guess who the composer of both movies is? Go on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Hey, would you believe the soundtrack is great?
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, so
no, I'm still looking forward to it. It's just
they
really
do that, and you see, you know, they just like, oh, here's them. You don't get to see what's his name, John Malkovich as the Red Ghost. Apparently, yeah, he was filmed for the movie, but you just see like, so yeah, there's just like quick clips of them, like, oh, here's where they fight like Mole Man, Paul Walter Hauser. Again, here's where they fight, you know, Giganto, like coming up out of the street, and it's kind you know, it's like the Fantastic Four. Yeah, there's a montage, but it's like, oh, here's the cover of Fantastic Four number one. And everything's great, and they're America's First Family, or you know, this family thing, and just like, yeah, here they are. And
how is the chemistry? I think that's my number one between
I think it's really good. Nice. Yeah. Like, so Reed Richards, I think, feels the most off because he's really kind of leaning into the, you know, he's the smartest man in the world, so he thinks of the worst shit, and like there's this like darkness to him. Like Ultimate Universe, Reed Richards is like the main villain of the Ultimate Universe because he's just like, you know, I think of these horrible things so I can think of solutions for them. And he seems really kind of a little conflicted about it. He's not just like some happy-go-lucky inventor. Like, he's definitely awkward, weird. But yeah, you know, the chemistry with the Thing and Johnny Storm is very good. And I really, you know, I wish there was like more scenes with them. Like, there's some really funny stuff.
Great.
I really like they make Johnny Storm isn't just like, oh, he's the hothead, hot shot, like whatever. Like, he's smart. He can solve problems. Okay. Like,
hey,
he is also an astronaut.
I like that. Yeah.
They're all, you know, Ben is the one who isn't like super smart. And he's the pilot, but you know, he's kind of the heart of it, and he's still, what the hell? something just went bang. Startled me.
Yeah, sure.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so I thought those interactions really good, like everything with you know, there's Galactus, man in a suit, giant man in a suit for Galactus, but I thought the Silver Surfer was really cool. Like one of my big takeaways out of the movie, and you know, it's Marvel movie mileage may vary at this point. But I think it's a good self-contained story. Obviously the best Fantastic Four movie, but they're like one of the best scenes I've seen in any of these movies is like, you know, they go out to talk to Galactus and they're escaping from him. And the Surfer is chasing them like through space. And it's awesome. Like great. It looks so cool. And the score for it is so awesome with, you know, like the, it's a, I thought it was a really, really good scene.
I need to hear that. Like I had heard early on that like they wanted to lean into the Kirby, and I'm just like, okay, let's see it. Yeah. Okay, good. Because like the trailers look like a TV drama. Like it's a lot of white walls and like people talking in rooms, and like they were holding back like so much on that end. Like once they started showing like the Surfer and Galactus, I'm like, okay. That feels better.
and it also, you know, it's a little corny because it's a period set piece thing that they're doing.
I'm good with corny.
I mean, like parentheses positive for sure.
I heard Sue Storm kind of steals the movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and that's Vanessa also Kirby. Good because I mean she's my favorite of the Fantastic Four. So that was cool. What the hell was I about to say? God damn it.
I'm most interested in seeing Eben Moss Baruch and seeing how much of his acting comes through the mocap. He's the reason he has been sort of my, I loved him being in Andor, and I love the idea of him being in more genre fiction, because the reason that he's cast as someone like Ben Grimm is because of his voice. And I know that, like, you know, he's a trained actor. He can do Shakespeare, but he's always going to be that guy with that very working class, you know, Chicago sort of voice. And he can't get away from that. And that lends him this feeling of authenticity that genre fiction often doesn't have. You know, genre fiction so often has these sort of heightened voices and or a more Eurocentric.
And voices that you, right. That you've heard a thousand times too, honestly, that you just kind of like drone out, frankly.
Yeah.
Like,
so to hear someone's authentic working class accent brings this level of groundedness to genre fiction that I absolutely love. I personally am using him as a vocal reference in a lot more of my work, trying to get more of that groundedness, because I'm usually so fake. Mm-hmm. I'm just so phone. Everything I do just never rings true. I know that
I'm not going to argue because I don't know your oeuvre. But... I did see your commercial without your link, which I love. I watched the Nintendo Direct, and then it went directly into that trailer. So.
Well, that's I love to hear that.
I just want to mention the on set like guy in the Thing costume was a British indie pro wrestler. So like the physical actor for the Thing is a pro wrestler. Yeah, awesome. I think it's cool. Yeah,
yeah, that's very cool.
It was good. I liked it. But it's like, it's so annoying. It was funny because I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, oh, like, you know, they've had like a few good movies in a row now. Like, and I was thinking back to like what had come out, and I was like, okay, so this, you know, like what?
Guardians 3.
Thunderbolts is what I was trying to think
of. You like Thunderbolts, right? Yes.
I did like Thunderbolts.
If it's on streaming, like I want to see, and, I'll watch all of these. I'm just not rushing.
Yeah, Thunderbolts. And I'm just like, yeah, I thought, you know, Wolverine and Deadpool was fun. And I'm like, oh, they went on a pretty good streak. And then I remembered that Captain America movie came out that I never saw.
Oh, yeah.
And I was
I'm going to see that too.
I was like, I guess I need to throw that on and just see what happens. Right. Because, of course, now that they've done like, you know, a couple movies in a row that like felt good again and were like a decent length and kind of had heart and story. It's like, we got to get ready for Avengers Doomsday. And I'm like,
nobody is, Yeah, nobody's pumped for it.
I'm not super stoked for them. Like they haven't earned going back to one of those yet at this point. And
DC is starting to at this point.
Yeah,
they keep that momentum.
Yeah, they're one movie in, I guess, but like.
Well, I'm counting the Batman. Like, I know it wasn't James Gunn.
Yeah, that's fair.
But,
that's fair.
You know.
Yeah. But just thinking like, oh, okay, I guess we're already doing one of these again, and I'm like not ready to see a bunch of characters, you know, because it's so much. It's not just like, oh, here's like the characters from the last few movies coming together. It's like, no, it's everything from the history of the MCU coming together.
And it feels more exhausting than thrilling.
Yeah. Like, I'm still going to see it for sure, but it's just like the magic is kind of not there for like the big picture. Like it was.
And honestly, at a certain
point.
Yeah. Like I know that I dropped off a little earlier, but I was, you know, there's stuff I like about Infinity War and Endgame, but like, I didn't love those movies either. Like, I was not one of the people cheering when they said the line. I was giggling under my breath. I was just like, that was silly. But I love when they went back to the cabin at the beginning of Endgame. I thought that was cool. Yeah, no, yeah. I would love to see. I don't know. Like, I don't know if a renaissance, like, it'll always come in waves. Like,
yeah.
I think you need people influenced by like different stuff, which I think is why James Gunn feels like kind of nice right now. But I'm glad Fantastic Four was taking like the right lessons, it sounds like.
Yeah, I feel like they all work. Any of these movies, you know, from the 30 some of them they are, always the best ones are the ones that like feel different from all the rest of them.
Even, and the studio system is not built for that, which is what sucks.
Yeah. You know, I've warmed up a bit on Winter Soldier because it does feel a little different going back to it now. Like, it has more of like an action spy movie edge to it. I still don't love the story of it, but like, okay, I could see like what they were doing here and why people like it.
Yeah.
And it definitely is not just like a schmoz of whatever.
Right. No, it's effects. I'm more frustrated with myself on Winter Soldier because it's well, my thing is like the ones that they're like, this is a spy thriller, and I'm like, spy thriller, and I'm like, sorta. <Yeah. laughs> like it's like
more
it fits
so
within
the
it.
First movie, I guess, but like.
Yeah, exactly. If that was straight up Tinker Tailor, I'm just like, yes, all right.
Oh, man, that would have been so good.
Yeah.
No.
Only other movie I've got, I saw The Life of Chuck, which is Mike Flanagan's movie.
Yeah,
It's very touching. It's very good. It's, I thought there was Tom Hiddleston does a, like, beautiful job. Like, I can't think of a time that I've complained about Tom Hiddleston per se, as we talk Marvel stuff as one of the standouts who's kind of been used to nauseam, I suppose, at that point. But it's interesting because Mike Flanagan is a guy who doesn't want to answer every question, and this is like, there was a reason that I think like this was more independent than I thought it was. Cause I was like, everybody knows who he is. He's made giant series for Netflix. He made Dr. Sleep. He's made a lot of movies at this point, but it was still kind of a smaller independent film. Like it came out later at my Regal. I didn't even think it was going to.
It really didn't get a lot of distribution up here where I live because me and Jan, I tried to take Jan to go see it on one of those rare days when we had no kids, and we couldn't find a showtime where we could actually make it because it just wasn't playing enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would definitely like that would be probably a good like date movie ? I feel like it's I always find for me, I don't know, like I don't like straight up romance in film, but I love. It's bigger than like a Lifetime kind of movies where it's like it's even if it's not like romantic, but like those relationships that go, like as problematic as it is, I love Cloud Atlas. Like, I think that is a very romantic, problematic, I understand, movie. Just going lifetime to lifetime. And it's kind of in that genre. But I think the difference on this one is those movies usually build to, like, a big climax of everything coming together. Mm-hmm. And this one is not interested in doing that. And that's A-OK.
Yeah.
But you don't walk away, like, with that, like, big rush. Mm-hmm. So it does take a second to go, like, okay, no, that was great. It didn't give me that high, but very, very good, like, ensemble cast.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't trying to. Yep. Yeah, so it's a good time.
Definitely.
Yeah, it'll pop up on something.
Yeah. I think that's all I got for movies.
Yeah, I got everything, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Do we want to do TV or games?
I don't think I haven't really seen any significant. I haven't seen any TV that's worth talking about personally.
Okay, so you haven't seen Strange New Worlds this season?
Oh yes, no, I have been. Yes.
Okay.
No. Okay.
So we can just do that one.
Let's like just
the,
do that one.
The
yeah.
only other. Yeah. I'm also rewatching Korra. I don't have much to say on that, except Varric is a better villain than I remembered. But no, Strange New Worlds. Like again, I love anything this cast does, so they mm-hmm. have a lot of credibility.
Yeah.
My only thing is I wish that they would space out the goofy episodes. There's the entire season is goofy episodes for the most part.
I have a feeling that the back half of the season is going to be less goofy. I think they're just front loading them. And that
I think so too.
I want to say I haven't gone back and checked, but I feel like last season the back half mm-hmm. was like every other episode was goofy.
Yeah, because I think it was they were doing back to back. They definitely did the musical episode like was like the second to last or third to last.
Yeah,
and the I went back and rewatched the crossover with Lower Decks episode at this point. Which was also in the back half. But I think those were the two goofy ones in the back half.
Yeah, yeah. I still love
the it just feels episodes. Like a lot. I still love it. Like, that's the thing. Is like, it's... I just want it to feel a little more special when we get to those. But I
yeah.
still really
oh, like yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think what these goofy episodes do, I dare say, better than the Rick Berman era Trek is still landing on really meaningful beats of emotional character growth, like the Trelane episode. I'm just going to call it the Trelane episode. We get Spock to a really emotionally vulnerable point, and that even though it's a goofy episode, it still pushes the story forward in a meaningful way for his character development. So it all feels really earned to me, honestly. And again, I think that it sure seems like they are, with all of the TOS hooks that they're planting this season with Roger Corby and with the Gorn, and like, I have a feeling the back half of the season is going to be a lot of big stuff happening.
I'm hoping. And like, this last episode wasn't goofy, and I really liked it.
Oh, geez,
and I feel like it felt so good. Like,
yeah. I will confess.
I was just like, yes.
I was very much. I was certain we were going to see an origin of Geordi's visor technology story.
I know. I'm glad that it didn't go like she's on that, even though like the look of it was very good.
Yeah.
Like the prototype, even it's the tiniest writer's note, but I wish that the episode before it, they would have saved using the name. I wish they would have kept saying recreation room until the visual reveal.
Yeah.
Because like the second you see it, you're like, ah, like you could have just a little bit. But
yeah. Even calling for Spock calling for the arch felt a little too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
24th century modern.
Right. And, you know, well, like it's weird that he's. It's weird that he's hooking up with so many people, but also back to chemistry. Like, that again felt like good chemistry, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they spent a few episodes developing it, and like,
yeah,
you know, just letting sort of the two least horny members of the crew develop this really like intense physical attraction, and mm-hmm. maybe they're wrong for each other. And but it's, I don't know, I'm into it. I'm super into it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's one of those things where like, I'll say like, I wish this or that, but like, I'm going to watch it first thing Thursday, you know, yeah, like I'm always yeah. hyped for.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this. This is the horniest Star Trek cast. I mean, maybe not the yeah. horniest. Deep Space Nine is pretty horny.
I mean, and TNG is pretty horny.
TNG lets the male characters get very horny.
Yes. I was going to say, that's exactly where I was going, where I was like, in a very specific male gaze.
Yes.
Everyone's wearing short skirts in the first season kind of way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Strange New Worlds is way more equal opportunity horny. Yep. And
let's get to Farscape horny.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I have very little to complain about beyond, I guess, I'm certain that there are still people out there that are really worried about how this show may or may not be breaking canon. But I feel like the show has already gone out of its way to point out, like, to give in-universe mm-hmm. reasons why canon might change. That whole episode where La'an went back in time to Canada, you know,
which was great.
does a lot of heavy lifting to say yeah. like, no, the timeline has changed. We keep trying to kill Khan and it doesn't work. And like,
yeah.
Yeah. So if things flux and change, it's cool.
Yeah. No, and I'm totally cool with that, like being on the edges instead of like, I'm sure eventually it will be main story stuff, but I kind of like it just be like, you know, we've already dealt with the alternate universe shit in the JJ movies.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like, it's kind of built into Trek a little bit at this point.
Yeah. And so this is something that we have argued about before in terms of like the Star Wars shows. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the big tensions of these legacy properties is when it comes to that canon breaking stuff, do you, you know, mm-hmm. when you split it into an alternate universe, it can end up feeling weightless, like yes. there's no consequence to the decisions. So even yep. though I know that they are making allowances for some variance in universe, mm-hmm. like it still feels like, oh, I know these characters, like there is consequence to knowing these characters and knowing their fates and knowing what's yes. going to, like people know we know what's going to happen to Roger Corby, and they're not going to completely mm-hmm. change that. Otherwise it would be weightless. It would have no consequence.
Yep. And I think, I mean, they've done such a good job developing everybody instead of one or two characters. So like if there's, I think the problem is when you get into multiple universe stuff and those two characters feel the same versus like, mm-hmm. oh no, my Spock is going to, you know, something bad happens to my Spock.
Yeah.
And my Chapel is going to feel it, you know,
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
Versus just some Spock. Yeah. One of thousands of Spocks. Spock guy.
If I was to level one complaint about this season, it's that I really like
there it is.
Melissa Navina's Erica Ortegas, and I have been sort of dying for them to give this character any sort of character development. And I feel like she finally got a little bit this season.
I liked that one. I liked that episode.
I like that they give her a bratty younger brother yes. that drives her crazy. I like that, but yeah. I really hope that the PTSD that they're giving her goes somewhere beyond just, oh, she's got beyond a very sort of tropey PTSD
yes.
story.
I agree.
It gives me a little pause that they're going to lean into some yes. PTSD tropes here. I hope they find somewhere interesting to go with that.
And forgive me for forgetting her name, but the relationship that Pike is in with
Captain Battelle.
Captain Battelle feels so Keiko to me
right what?
Now, like O'Brien's wife, Keiko, which is a compliment, but that like their relationship just feels kind of like that, where we're cutting to like this warm kind of relationship there. I don't know.
In the sense,
I was,
I
just
I guess I get that vibes in the sense of like, well, look, I got to go to work. You know, it feels like mm-hmm. a very real relationship in which they have these sort of problems because they are both working professionals and they get to express their frustrations with each other.
It's just whenever, you know, like DS9 would like cut to like, it's the same thing when they cut to like sort of thing. But yeah, great show. Everyone should watch the show. I'm glad that they already greenlit another season.
Yeah.
Even though
I think it's going to be their final.
Is that the last one?
I think so. Yeah.
So I can't feel sad if a modern show gets 4 seasons.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
And goes out on top, hopefully. So.
Totes.
But yeah, TV. Tim, you got
I appreciate
TV?
How they didn't, you know, they're comfortable recasting Spock and not just computer generating Leonard Nimoy's corpse to.
Boy. What was there's just something out right now that I didn't even realize was using AI for something, but you know. That just keeps happening.
It just keeps happening. Yes. Ow. All right, video games.
Digi games.
This
is the most video games I will ever have on any of our podcasts. Oh,
is it because you played a ton of Playdate games?
Well, because I played Castlevania Collection, Playdate Season 2, and UFO 50. So,
that's a lot of individual games.
Yeah, I didn't play everything on all of those.
Yeah,
but
I still have so much of Playdate Season 2 to play.
I still have so much of UFO 50 to play, yet to play.
Yeah, that too. Yes, and much UFO 50 to play. I've just been playing. I've still, like, you know, because I pick it up and, like, I kind of play a couple rounds of Dig Dig Dino, and I'm, like, pretty much done with it.
Oh, yeah. Get to the end of that one, though. It's worth it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I like how fucking weird it's being.
Yes, that's what I mean. No, yeah. I loved it. That was one of my favorites this season.
I played a little bit of the Turnip with Hands Metroidvania deal.
Yeah, Tiny Turnip.
It was cool. Yeah.
I like Tiny Turnip. I need to go back to that.
I didn't like, what was the game with the long, is it Long Dog is the Long Dog?
Puppy. Long Puppy took a bit to get used to. What's that game about
the really long puppy? Oh, Long Puppy.
Yeah.
I like it except for when the Bubble Bobble Whale shows up, basically. You've taken too long, hurry up or you will die. Like, I never like that in a game.
It's just tension. Yeah, and
like once I got used to, because the controls are weird on it, but once I got
they
used
are.
To like yeah. I will say if you haven't played the rhythm game yet, Otto's Galactic Groove.
Yeah.
I did really, you know, shocker, I beat it. But like go in and adjust the speed, like the there's a meter for like your response. Mm-hmm. And I think it starts you on like 10. I put it down to like fucking 3 or 1. Like I put it really low because it was moving all over the place.
Okay.
Because you're controlling the line up and down with the crank. Mm-hmm. And it would just wasn't accurate. Like it's basically Guitaro Man rules. Okay. Like you're following a line. And it was just way too sensitive. So like once I turned that sensitivity down, way better.
Yeah. A thing I historically do with most games when as I start them up, I'm turning down sensitivities of things. I don't know like who you think I am.
I'm not one that usually goes into settings, but this one was like, wow. Oh, God. Yeah, it was not meant. I don't, I mean, like game to game, I don't have a ton to say, but Black Hole Havoc was interesting. I saw a friend of ours, Bobby, talking about not liking the controls, and it's interesting because it's kind of an inverse of Asteroids, but it's more Puzzle Bobble. That's what I didn't expect. Like, you think you're going to be playing like an Asteroids kind of game, but it's, you're more kind of like doing guesswork Puzzle Bobble. Yeah, no, I didn't write down much on Tario and Como. Tario and Como was really good. I don't remember the details about the game, except I wrote down this game specifically I need to play during the light of day. I don't have enough lights in my house for this one at night. So
I did play some of Catch a Diablos. I think you're making circles in that game.
to like catch enemies or something like that.
Oh yeah. That was interesting. I didn't click with it, but it was a cool idea. Yeah. Like it was just like the season, cause that was another one. My routine for Thursdays was set my play date to download games and then watch Star Trek. And then all of a sudden it was just gone. And I was just like, oh no, the season's done already, just because they were pairing games together.
Yeah.
So I need to go back, but obviously plate loaded at the moment. But as a whole, I really enjoyed the season. I thought,
The
way they did it was just so satisfying to, like, that's how I like playing playdate at this point, is the seasons. Everything else is fun, but I drop off of too quickly.
You guys notice the patent leak that Nintendo has filed a patent for a crank-style attachment to the Joy-Con 2?
Yeah, and I don't see this as, like, a direct, because there's such different markets. It's like, there's going to be some great fishing games. Like, that's clearly,
make it. They patent so much weird shit that they come up with that they're just like, we got this, so we're going to patent it before somebody else does, and we might use it or we might not.
I mean, it would be handy, I guess, if they port some Playdate games over, because some of the Playdate games are on itch.io, you know, too, just without crank controls and stuff.
Yeah, we need we need the modern Sega Bass Fishing port.
Yeah, that's that was the first thing I said. Yes, please.
I saw that and immediately thought Playdate. Like, man, I really hope that. I mean, I don't know how many Playdate developers would love to be able to sell their games on Switch. Like, I don't know if that opens up their games to a much broader audience, or if they, you know,
I'd have to think it does.
I would have to think it does, right? I mean, but then again, you know,
that's the thing. Like, I don't know. It's interesting because a lot of those developers specifically liked the goal of the Playdate to be the smaller specific thing, but also for new people. And I don't see it cutting away at their market. I feel like it is a specific thing. If you want a Playdate, you will enjoy a Playdate.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, straight up.
I think especially since the way
Dave, those pictures... I have a coupon if you want it.
A what?
A Playdate coupon.
A Playdate? There's coupons?
They sent out coupon codes to those who bought season 2. Like, really? It gives you something like 20% off or something like that.
Like,
to buy the hardware?
Wow.
Oh, you're right. Cool. I forgot about that. I think they archived it on sale.
But,
oh, man.
Yeah.
A new piece of video game hardware is the last thing in the world I need. But 20%
I know.
I
I don't know if I could do this to you like a month after I suckered you into buying another piece of hardware.
It's all you.
$30 off a Playdate plus cover bundle.
And you're going to want the cover. It's so satisfying.
Well, from the way this patent looks, you need to detach a Joy-Con and hold it with two hands, and so you wouldn't be able to do it handheld. You'd have to at least set the Switch on a tabletop in order to do it. So it wouldn't be the same experience, right, as holding a Playdate in your hand and turning the cranks. So there's still plenty of room in the market for a Playdate.
Yeah. But well done, Season 2. I hope I don't wait too long to pick up my Playdate again, is all. Like, now that we can wishlist stuff and I get emails when stuff's on sale, at least through the catalog, that helps.
So much going on there. Like, it is.
I know.
It's tons of games and stuff. It's more than I ever thought that I was going to get out of this thing.
Same.
So,
yeah, like, 100%.
Every other game and experience I have on there is something. It's just like all gravy at this point.
Yeah. I thought it was going to have like a good burst at the beginning and then maybe be like a Neo Geo Pocket or, you know, like a Nokia or whatever.
Be a thing where it's like, oh, there's like games coming out like every week.
Just about.
It's just like, oh,
I thought it would have a you know, hungry homebrew community, and that would be maybe it for the future.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, Dave seems distracted.
My cat might be stuck down here. I'm not sure if Jan closed the basement door. I can't tell if she just wants to be with me or if she's stuck. Maybe. Either way, it's fine.
She might want attention because you're talking to someone that is not her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
games.
Let's talk about that that Ninja Gaiden Ragebound.
Oh man, did you play that?
Did you both get that?
I did. Well, I played. Well, I got it because I
code
did it. Yeah, I did a code and I did a review for Joe on it.
Yo.
I was gonna buy it anyway, but it's like when when he's like, "Hey, do you want me to? You want to not spend money for this thing in exchange for talking about it for 20 minutes?" I'm like, "Yeah, I can do that." Yeah, that game's good. It is a good ass game.
Cool.
And it's funny because I don't feel like I also played the Shinobi demo because there's a new Shinobi game coming out at the end of this month, and I don't think they really step on each other's toes.
Good.
Because I think from playing. So Ninja Gaiden is very much like most of the enemies you kill in one slash, like you would in Ninja Gaiden 1. It's like they come flying in from off the screen. You're like, boom, slash, you're gone, fucker. They have a system in place where there are some larger enemies that would take more hits, but there will be usually an enemy will appear on the screen with this little aura. And if you kill that enemy, you then get a hyper slasher, I think is what it's called, which will just kill that large enemy in one hit. So it kind of becomes this little puzzle of like, okay, like as soon as you see one of these big guys, you're like, okay, something's going to come in from somewhere so I can get this. I just have to kind of manage the situation for a second so I can get this ability to kill this thing in one hit and then keep running.
That sounds like keep running. That's what I was going to say. Is that my hope is that this game preserves that driving sense of forward momentum.
Yeah, you are moving. Like it has a thing where you can jump off enemies like with a what's called a guillotine slash. So it's like you can...
Oh, sure.
It will kill them or do damage. You just kind of bounce off and you can bounce off different enemies. Like the game is all about you moving forward.
I believe the Xbox Ninja Gaiden had the guillotine slash or something guillotine. Yeah.
So I think there's sometimes it will just like lock you in a room and a bunch of enemies will come out and you got to like deal with them really quickly. But it's not like it is with a lot of other kind of 2D action games where it's like it's not combo based, it's you're not like figuring out how to slash down and like juggle these enemies and like manage them on the screen. Like you are just cutting through them like as fast as you can and moving on, and that's what feels really good and very Ninja Gaiden-y to me. You get like, you know, stuff you can throw around the screen too, so that's cool. It's good. It's a good game.
So one of my favorite games from last year was Shadow of the Ninja Reborn, and it took me a while to come to terms that I could not play that game like a Ninja Gaiden, that game had to be played more like an old Castlevania, where you had to be slower, methodical, every enemy encounter was meaningful.
I checked out that demo like in hand with the Ragebound and Shinobi demos, and I was like, oh, what the fuck is this? Like, which one was good compared to those?
Shadow of the Ninja, was that the Xbox 360 arcade game, or is this a newer game?
This is an old Natsume NES game. Tangentially related to the Ninja Gaiden series, because the Game Boy Ninja Gaiden was actually a reskinned Shadow of the Ninja game.
Gotcha. Okay, I remember the Nintendo box for thereof.
For Ninja Gaiden was that it was not that same thing again. So, I've never played Blasphemous, but I'm assuming Blasphemous is a little slower and more ponderous.
So, Blasphemous, I actually didn't like Blasphemous, the first one. It's a Metroidvania kind of Soulsborne-y deal where you have to do like corpse runs and stuff. And like the art in the world of that game I thought was very cool, but just playing it was a complete fucking drag. And I heard that the second one is better about that, but it's not like those games because this is not a Metroidvania. But it's still like the art and sprites are gorgeous. The pixel art, they are top tier with that stuff over at that company. So, yeah, I know I've been eyeballing like Blasphemous 2 is like on sale right now. And I'm like, maybe I'll give these guys another shot right now. Mm-hmm. Throw them a few more bucks right now.
It's such a crowded room of Ninja Gaiden games that I'm glad that I will remember that the one called Ninja Gaiden is a good one, because that's my problem with like so many of the last 5 years of Ninja Gaiden likes, where I'm just sort of like, okay, now I got to go research to see if this was a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Is this one that I'm going to enjoy?
Yeah, I was trying to remember the name of Cyber Shadow.
Cyber Shadow, that's what the one I was thinking
That was
of,
exactly what I was thinking of.
Which I thought was harder than this, but you know, I don't know what difficulty is in video games anymore.
And then there's another one that's a little more like the Sega Genesis Shinobis. I'm trying to think of what that one was called. I'll think of it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Shinobi game that's coming out, that felt more like methodical. And less, it does have like an air dash in it, which Ninja Gaiden didn't have. So, you know, it had some different stuff going on. I think they can both stand on their own, and we can both be excited about getting cool 2D ninja games again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What was that game?
Well, there was that's going. I don't remember how much I talked the Castlevania GBA collection, but I have beaten the three, and then after beating Aria, I'm just sort of like, you know, they threw in Dracula X. I'm going to start up Dracula X. Mm. And after the controls of Aria, I went, no. Nope, I can't do it. I'm so sorry. I'm glad you put it there just as a weird bonus, but it's such a slug. Like, I need to play other stuff in between, and I'll go back.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I think even compared to Rondo.
Yeah. No,
it just
Rondo
doesn't quite feel as mobile. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I still like it. It's just like the lowest of like those, of just like that in Castlevania 4, even, you know. But yeah, no. Circle of the Moon, I think like the big note for myself is you need the cards to enjoy the game, because my thing was like, I'm just going to progress at a normal speed and then not worry about the cards. If I get the cards, I get the cards. And then I just got to a point that I'm just like, I've had the same weapon for like half this game.
Yeah.
And I'm so
I need
bored.
Those damn cards.
Man. So once I started getting those on the regular, I was having a much better time with the game. Then Harmony of Dissonance looks better than I remember. It's a good looking game. I think like that map sucks. I think like that's kind of it's so plotty. It does have like I consider the like the main song from Harmony is. There's a couple songs in there that I was just like, oh right, I should just listen to the soundtrack more, but it's sparse, almost in a Ritual of the Night kind of way, you know, where you're just walking around going like, all right, something happened. So that one was just kind of a bit tedious in between. And then Aria Sorrow is basically no notes, you know, like that's just a fucking great game. Like it does kind of like you get everything and it's just like, oh, okay, game's over. Cool. Like, I obviously there is the puzzle of like a bad ending, good ending, best ending sort of thing, but like there is a lot of stuff that kind of like shows up right at the end, and like I would have loved to have had the panther zip around the castle a little longer, I guess. I just kind of went like, all right, and then boop boop boop. Phew. But yeah, fucking yeah, nice to play Aria again, especially, yeah, I know you use it to test, but it has been a long time since I've actually beat it. I fired it up before, but...
Yeah, let's just say, when did I last beat it? Probably within the last 10 years, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I tried Julius mode, and I really like Julius. I just don't like walking around with... Like, it just feels like I'm doing it to do it at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah,
it's a downgrade.
Really nice. Yeah, yeah.
From our boy.
I'd like to see him get his. I know he was in both Sorrow games, but he could get his own. Would be nice. But yeah, it was a good time. So now I've gotten my Castlevania play and also quickly I had mentioned I haven't gone back to, but I've played about half of Beautiful Joe because after replaying Okami, it's just kind of been in my craw to like fire up, and I eventually just bought a cheap HDMI converter for the Wii because I didn't realize I didn't. I bought a nice TV that was inexpensive because it only has HDMI ports, basically. I think.
So I'm curious about those cheap HDMI adapters. Does it do the job?
Like, it's not something. Yeah, it's not something that I would say, like, you've got to see this. Like, it doesn't feel like a huge upgrade, but it does the job. Like, I paid $10 and it does the job.
All right.
Basically. Yeah. Like, if I want nice, I'm going to spend $200 to $500.
It doesn't ruin the image for you, right?
It doesn't ruin the image. Okay. No. No, it's still, I'm just, the art direction in that game is just one of my favorite just worlds. The way the camera, like, moves, just the way, like, when you go up and it's bending around the screen to look up, and the impact of like slowing down and then zooming in and then punching a face and then everything flies out of it will always be satisfying.
Yeah. Forgive me for interrupting. Vengeful Guardian Moon Rider is the Sega Genesis style ninja game by Joy Masher, makers of Blazing Chrome. And something else.
Blazing Chrome is a better title. As fun as those words are.
Yeah. Vengeful Guardian Moon Rider. That's the other ninja game that I have been wanting to try. And I should add it to my wish list, which I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to download the demo.
Yeah. No, all I got on Beautiful Joe is just I really fucking like Clover. Like, Clover knocked it out of the park. Everything they did.
Yeah, I actually a couple months ago I tried playing Beautiful Joe 2 on my Steam Deck, which you know ran totally fine. I just felt dirty, and I'm just like, I have to play this with a Wavebird. Yeah, just like it just felt wrong.
Dirty.
That is something. Well, I do have 2 on GameCube, so I do want to get to that one too, just to give it more love. But
yeah, it also felt like this, like when I was playing, you know, when I play the Nintendo Online, you know, the GameCube games on the Switch 2, I'm just like, am I going to have to get one of those GameCube controllers eventually just to, like, have? Because it's just that button layout is so unique, and that's what it's what my body craves. You can tell me it's wrong, but it just feels so right.
No, I'm pretty, you know, like, ranking things is hard, but, like, Wavebird is definitely, like, if it's not my favorite controller, it's top 3. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way around it. Yeah. It's satisfying.
The feeling of holding that thing is so good.
Yep.
8-Bit Do finally released what looks like a really good N64 controller, and I really hope that they do the same for GameCube. Like, it'd be awesome if they just made a GameCube layout one also.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, nice? Actually, I would probably pick that up, too.
Yeah.
That would What you played in UFO 50 so far?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I only wrote down the 2 that I really got into. I was it's hard not to think of Retro Game Challenge playing the game. So I was, you know, it was like game starts up. I got 50 games right there, and I'm just like, oh, there's no okay. So I'm just going in and I'm just picking games. Okay. Well, there's nothing to stop me, but also like. I wasn't sure if there was going to be like a mini story or like some kind of spine or whatever. So I was like, and then the first few I played, I wasn't clicking with, and I'm just like, oh no, is it all going to be like this? But then I got to Atractix, and, then I beat Atractix. So this one, I don't know if you've even played, it's a, do you call it? I guess it's not. I guess it's tower defense, tactics. But it's a tactics. Oh, I put an R in there. Okay, I wasn't.
Yes.
Sure. Oh,
okay, got it.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah, it's laid out like Plants vs. Zombies. Mm-hmm. But the I couldn't put it down once I got like the feel of it, and it was.
Oh man, this looks fun. I don't think I played. I was kind of adverse to playing like anything that said it was like RPG or basically anything that I thought said it was going to take too long to get into right away. I was trying to go through maybe more arcadey stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I've been doing that too, and like that's been tricky. So like I still haven't played enough of the ones that have like really hooked me, which will be like after this, of course. But yeah, that was the, I think, my favorite of the ones that I've played so far. Like I really got into that, and then nice. I just got to Fist Hell, which
yeah, Fist Hell's cool.
You know, that was exactly what you were talking about, though. I was looking for that word arcade, and I'm just like, okay, yep, that sounds fun. It's called Fist Hell. It's exactly what it says on the box. Can't beat a beat 'em up. I think what surprised me so far is like I expected this to be closer to Retro Game Challenge, also in that it would take like a game or two, and you would be like, oh, this is the Mega Man game. Oh, this is this game. But I feel like UFO 50 is more, it started somewhere, and there's more modern retro game mechanics in it than I've experienced. I haven't played a lot of those games the last 5 years.
Yeah.
In a lot of genres that I normally don't play, like I wouldn't normally pick up a tower defense. I don't like tower defense. This is like one of like two or three that I've enjoyed.
Yeah, because let's so I kind of have this to... down to a two button interface and make sure that the player can, you know, grok how to play it within the first 5 minutes, or else there's 49 other games.
Well, and also I guess with like the tower defense specifically, like my thing is like, those always, like, real-time games spike my anxiety in a way that I don't enjoy. like RTS, I'm just sort of like, nah, I'm just a wreck at this point. Just watching StarCraft, the flutters. But the way it was paced out was, like, very well done on this one. So it's training me to not look at the genre as much and just go like, okay. I'm just going to see what you throw at me, see if it clicks, and I'm going to mark all my favorites. Then I'm going to go back to those and then come back to a couple of those. Like, I've been picking at Kick Club a bit.
I played so much Kick Club. Yeah. I
haven't quite gotten to, like, I totally get it. The jumping mechanics are still weird to me, but it's bubble bobble with a soccer ball.
Yeah.
You know, so like that right there.
Yeah. It's cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. I kind of speed running that game when I was figuring out how to finish it. It's cool. Yeah. I really like that one. Yeah. That's the thing. Cause it's just like, you know, I'll kind of like try a bunch of things, and then, you know, find some favorites that I might keep looping back to, like Valgrass, which is tough, but like is like a really cool game. And then it's like
there's a bunch of like I think that one specifically I had was exactly the same, where I was like, I'm enjoying this, but it is kicking my ass. So
I wish
there were save states. That would be nice for me, but
yeah, I just keep it's just like, oh, I'll just play a few rounds of Valgrass and then I'll play other stuff.
I just want to hear the
tune. Like Ninpec, I ended up finishing like a round of figuring that game out. And then, you know, you'll play something like Mooncat, and it's like, what is this weird ass shit?
Yeah.
And yeah, I didn't click that one yet, but
yeah. Well, it's like, I was like, I don't want to deal with this, but I kind of want to come back to it and muck around with it more to see what's going on. Like, what were they thinking? But it's emulating the idea that, like, you know, there was not standardized controls for things, you know, say in the 80s, where it was like, oh no, this is how you jump in character. It's like, oh no, we're still figuring that out. So like there's this game Mooncat that did this weird thing, and you know, it worked for Mooncat, but it runs counter to everything else.
What is freeing, I think, is that while they are less focused on genre and more focused on, let's take this one mechanic. So, you know, it's they are not sticking to the, you know, all of the various accoutrements of an RTS, but they're like, well, what is the one sticky mechanic that we can take from that genre and build our whole game around? that and I love that level of focus. And that I yes. feel is what feels modern about it is mm-hmm. that sort of these are not genre remakes. Like, well, you can argue the other way too, is that so many mm-hmm. modern indie, you know, remakes are like, no, we're remaking this genre. We are recreating a game in this style. And that's not what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're latching onto a single mechanic really for each game and building out from there. So like, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. really, yeah, the Moondog mechanic is like, yeah, this is an obtuse platformer that controls weird. this is our mechanic. What can we do with it? Let's make it super weird.
Yeah, like, that's camouflage. You're a chameleon and you have to change colors according to the ground. And but it kind of plays like Adventures of Lolo, where it's like an mm-hmm. overhead puzzle level, but right. instead of pushing around eggs or whatever, it's like, oh, I have to figure out how to mm-hmm. use the camouflage to get myself to the other side. But that's the one mechanic. Yeah, like that's it.
Yeah, similar to the whatever the racing game with the paint.
Oh yeah, I love that game.
Yeah, Paint Chase. Yep.
It's super, like, I'm shit at it, but the idea of it is super cool. Yeah, like, I don't know if I'll be able to master that one.
I'm sorry, I'm talking over you now.
Oh, no, we're all going to, like, that's the thing is there's 50, we're going to tangent. What was the?
I just still haven't played half the games.
A game like Paint Chase is mechanics-led, right? And so the game grows out from that. And the end product certainly reminds you of other games. Like, in the end, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, you could describe this as a cross between, like, Rally X with elements of, like, you know, Pac-Man Maze Chase kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But really, the core mechanic is neither of those games. It's its own thing. Sorry, I'm going to stop talking now.
No. That's agreed. Like, that's, like... I think what was so wonderful, like, I'm kind of glad that I didn't get a game I clicked with right off. Mm. I think that actually helped the experience of, like, easing into it and seeing what the game was, like, doing. And that it was, like, kind of what we say on, like, a lot of things. It has rooms to, like, make mistakes, even if they're not, like, mistakes.
Yeah.
To just, like, let it do that. No, yes. I was...
they don't all have to click with you, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. The game that is basically Snake, where you're you're collecting things that add to your tail.
Is that Magic Garden?
If you haven't played that
one. Yeah.
I don't know what it's called, so I honestly don't know. Yeah, but where you have to encase enemies.
Yes.
Or there's like arrows and they disperse your tail.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is Magic Garden. Yeah.
I liked it. Yeah. It was just like, it was a pain in the ass to figure out at first, but I've played, you know, like maybe 12 of these games to just like dip in, mm-hmm. you know? So, and I guess I'm assuming everybody kind of has that thing where like, you're like, oh, I want to try out everything. And then you click with one and then you're like, okay, I'm going to play this until... it's done, which is what a Tactics was for me. But mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, there's been a couple of games where I'm like, I want to move on, but I end up just playing this one game until midnight.
I just kind of keep poking until something clicks, like really clicks, and then I keep playing that game, really. And that's why I haven't played half the games on there still, but I've played it put quite a lot of hours into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's cool that, like, oh, I can just keep coming back to it, and there will be more games for me to muck around with.
Now, I understand that, obviously, you have the option to play this on a Steam Deck, but I can't picture people sitting down and not playing this portable. Like, it feels like it was made to be a portable game at this point.
I have enjoyed it both ways. I even got the Linux Portmaster port to play it on one of my Linux handhelds that is roughly Switch Lite sized. That's a great way to play it because that's a smaller screen. The Steam Deck is a great way to play it because that's still in your hand. But also playing it on the screen gives you that sort of, I don't know, like this is a retro game system that this is how it would have been played had it been real, that sort of conceit. So, mm-hmm. I like it always.
Yeah. Heather it. No, it's interesting to like go in going like, this was a lot of people's game of the year, like, and then happening to go like, well, okay, like, imagine this came out of nowhere. Also, like, it's hard. Like, I'm not, if I had played it yet last year, I'm not sure if I would have put it there yet. Mm-hmm. But boy, is it a wealth of riches at this point.
Yeah, it really is. It's a huge achievement. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, years worth of work and years well spent.
I assume this is a team of one or small.
I don't. A lot of it is Derek Yu, the guy who made Spelunky.
Spelunky, yeah. Okay,
but you know, there's like a couple other people that made a lot of the games with him.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Cool.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, small team, labor of love over many years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was one of those things where I was like, I told both of you I was going to wait for a sale, and then like I had a good paycheck and I'm just like, it's literally $5. What am I doing? Yeah. Like, that's the difference of that sale.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great game. There's a hidden 51st game. I didn't know that.
I assumed, but yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
That's
I still got so much of that game to play before I even think about figuring out how to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Switch 2 stuff.
Yeah.
Dave, it looks like you haven't played a lot of Bonanza.
No, I actually haven't. Oh, wow. And that's mostly because we've been busy as hell. I did buy it day one, and my kids really love it. And my youngest has been just spending her downtime just grabbing the Switch off the dock and playing through it on her own. And she is farthest in the game. On her own. I didn't know, you know, it's kind of a thing where we start a game like this and we never know, like, guys, are we all playing this together or what are we doing here? But she just,
is this a family activity or
exactly,
we just kind
of, yeah. And it's sort of become like, nope, well, she's just way ahead of us now. She's doing her own thing. So, yeah, I really like it. It purely is opportunity and competition with my playtime. Competition for my spare playtime with Claire Obscure. But not a reflection of my enjoyment of it, because honestly, it absolutely is the unofficial sequel to Mario Odyssey that I hoped it would be, and an extension beyond the Mario Odyssey gameplay that switching franchises allows for. So... Mm-hmm. It's great. I think it's excellent. I'm having a great time with it so far and can't wait to play more.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm quite a ways into it. It's a big game. It's very sizable. It's just like, but it's just fun. That's really just how to describe it best is like, oh, they made a game that's just really fun to do the things in it. It kind of annoys me in the same way that something that I didn't love about Odyssey that I also don't necessarily love about this game. It's kind of nitpicky, but it's like, you know, the bananas and the moon kind of just run together at a certain point. It's not like with Stars or in Galaxy or 64 or even Shines in Mario Sunshine. Oh, yeah, you remember this level. Or like what you'd have to do to get this star. Yep. This is just like, I was incidentally punching through a wall and there happened to be a banana here.
Yeah.
And I climbed in. Oh, there just happened to be a banana here. And it's like, I'll just rapid fire get like 5 bananas in 5 minutes. And it's like, I just, banana. Okay,
yeah, those are coins at that point.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, like one sub-level. I love the conceit of like burrowing to the center of the earth and finding all these wacky worlds along the way. I think that's a very fun way to do things. But it's like, you know, one level will have like 80 bananas in it. It's just like, that's so many bananas.
It's too many bananas.
It's just so many bananas.
This was a rare game that I watched the IGN like preview of, and I'm just like, God, that looks fucking fun to break everything. It just looks very well made.
they put together this mechanic where it's like, yeah, you can just break apart just about any part of the environment, and that's what you use to it's like in Mario, you play these games, and the main way you interact with the world is jumping. more or less. And this DK Bonanza asked the question, well, what if your main way of interacting with the world was punching? and that's what you, there are moments when you have to do like platforming, of course, and jumping. Mm-hmm. You're jumping all the time, but like mainly it's like you're burrowing through things and punching stuff and smashing things into each other.
Or and climbing. Like, and that's.
Or climbing. Yeah. Just climbing straight up, you know, things.
And that's, you know, switching the main character to Donkey Kong, that it lets them explore a lot of the same things that a core Mario game would. But like, you know, here's this whole other suite of abilities that make more sense diegetically. And I guess my worry about that destructive ability and a destructible environment in general is that when you can make, when the whole environment is destructible, obstacles become less meaningful. You know, like how do you design a level in which the environment is destructible? But it's, I was surprised that it never occurred to me that in practice, the destructibility of the environment is actually a lot more like Super Mario Brothers. It feels like you're smashing bricks. Like you are not encouraged to destroy the whole environment because you need something to, you know, walk on. You can, like, if you want to stay on one screen and bash all the bricks in Super Mario Brothers, you can, but that also gets boring after you do it for a while, and it doesn't really ruin the forward momentum of the game. So And it's an equally satisfying crunch too. That's the nice thing is that punching through stuff feels like breaking bricks.
As somebody who will completely stop dead to smash every brick in Mario, that does sound fun.
It is crunchy.
To break
it feels everything. Real crunchy.
Well, that's the thing. It's crunchy. Every once in a while, you'll get a star.
Yeah, there's stuff in there. There's treasure.
This is like the real Switch launch game, killer app, like thing. Yep. And I love just picking up my Switch and like, you know, I can play it for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 45 minutes or an hour or something like that and just have like an absolute fucking blast playing a video game that just does a bunch of video gamey shit. Not have to worry about anything else. And you get weird abilities. You get abilities that are expected in very weird shapes, I guess I'll say. it's just a lot of fun. And I'm just kind of like, I'm definitely not trying to 100% every area before I move on. Cause I think that would just be horrible. But I'm just kind of like going with the flow and moving in the general direction of where I'm supposed to be going. And like, just if I see something interesting, I'm going to go and smash it up or whatever. Pretty casually just kind of making my way through it. They have side rooms with like combat challenges, but also like kind of classic 2D platforming stuff, like homages to, you know, classic DK levels. Mm-hmm. There's like a minecart level. One very early on that's basically like, oh, here's the first level of Donkey Kong Country, and here's one.
Ah, nice.
You know, the Bramble Blast, like where you're shooting yourself around in the. It's cool. It's great. It's a fucking awesome game. It's number one game to get on a Switch 2.
Yeah, totally.
Now, when you say climbing, is there any DK3, DK Jr.? DK Junior math
kind
of, not that I've seen.
Yeah, no.
Okay, because I love that climbing, but okay.
It's more.
It is not required. I was just curious.
Well, it's just like you just hit a wall and you just run up it, really.
Yeah,
Adds verticality to the levels, I guess.
You can rip up pieces of the ground and hit enemies with them, like throw chunks of the ground enemies, on them, like. Yeah, it's so fun.
At one point, we were all playing it together, and I can't remember if it was Jan or one of the kids who said to me, like, they said, like, okay, so this doesn't look appreciably more beautiful or better than Mario Odyssey, so what is the, but I know that the Switch 2 is a more powerful system, so what's the deal there? Like what's going on? And so it was kind of an opportunity for me to explain like, Well, you know, in any system, what you're balancing is like graphical fidelity. How sharp are the graphics versus how much of the world is on display right now, right? Like, yeah. How big is this area? How far can I see from end to end? And how far can I travel from end to end without the game having to stop and be like, oh, nope, we need to get rid of what was loaded before and load in new stuff. And so I had to stop and be like, yep. Let's pan around and look around and compare the size of this level to the size of an average Mario Odyssey level or an area in Mario Odyssey in which we don't have to go through a door and get to another area of the level where you can't see everything. Like that's kind of what's going on here is that these levels are huge and completely seamless. So you don't have to break them up into discrete chunks. And they're like,
yeah, hop in GTA 3 for comparison, like original GTA 3. Yeah.
Well, but it's not broken into discrete chunks, but then you will break it into discrete chunks. You can just, the fact that you can rip apart everything.
Yes.
Right before the game came out, I saw some grumbling about performance issues. I have not seen that shit. Like, except for like maybe a couple of occasions when there's been like a lot of enemies doing stuff on the screen, but that's like twice in 15 hours that things got like a little bogged down because so much was happening. But and I'm starting to get like in the area of the game I'm in now, there's like a lot going on with like how different materials interact with each other. And it's starting to become complex in that way, which is nice. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. The game's always fun. Yeah. It's never not fun. Yeah,
I always like whenever there's like destructive environmental gameplay. Like I think back to that being the main point of Phantom Dust for Xbox, where it's just like you could break every wall. It was very satisfying. It was just so hilariously limited in comparison at this point, as that was still basically like a card-based RPG. Yeah. That you could walk around and break all the walls if you wanted to. Like, you got into, like, psychic force kind of battles.
No. Nice.
Was that a From Software game?
I don't think so.
No. They were... No, Lost Kingdoms was their weird card RPG in that era.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Yeah,
because, that one they did have one.
Yeah. What else? So, Switch 2 at this point?
Well, I don't know. I guess, you know, there was more Mario Kart and I kind of stopped playing that. I just like I wish it had a classic Grand Prix mode. I did like the knockout tour, even though like it's a savage, shitty beast to you when you can lose out at the very, very end of. But yeah, I just wish like I just even. Yeah, I. Eh,
mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't feel like a strong connection with a lot of the tracks like I did in like Mario Kart's past. And there's just not really, you know, other than playing like a time and even playing the time trials, it's just like sometimes feels weird or like lacking in some ways. And I don't care for exploring the open world in the game. I didn't have really any fun with that.
Counterpoint. I mean,
again, like this Burnout Paradise thing. Where it's like I never really glommed on to Burnout Paradise, but it's like just kind of driving around in Mario Kart world. I'm like, there's nothing, not really seeing anything out here. I'm not enjoying this challenge that I found. I'm just kind of like, that.
What we've been doing it with it recently is we found the very roundabout way that you need to do in order to do a two-player local split screen free roam. In which you need to start an online game, create your own lobby, and then just don't invite anyone else to join it.
Yeah,
that is the only way to do split screen free roam. And that's great. And that is, I have a lot of fun with my kids just driving around aimlessly going, look at that, let's do this. And it gives it a very sort of playground kind of feel, only with Mario Kart mechanics. So that's been where we've been spending most of our time lately. Yeah.
What else you got? Other thing I guess I've been working on is the old Death Stranding.
This keeps coming up. I've got a friend playing that at work for the first time as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not playing two. This is the first one, which I've never played.
Yep, same.
I'm only, God, I did start playing it in June, but I'm only like 16 hours into it. So this game is fucking weird. And what's going on here? One of the first things, you know, you have to do is take the president's body to carry the president's body on your back to an incinerator so it can be safely disposed of and doesn't turn into a nuke. And also the president is your mom.
I was like, all of that can be contextualized until the end. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and you know it rains. It's just insane. Like, yeah, no, it's Guillermo del Toro's in it. There's so much Mads Mikkelsen. I had a boss fight against Mads Mikkelsen. Because you know, suddenly, I met Conan O'Brien, and he gave me the otter suit. to help me with water stuff. But yeah, I don't know why I didn't think I'd be interested in playing this game when it came out and the reviews
came. No one sold it well, I think, at the time. Yeah.
Well, I think just people were just like, oh, you know, it's like, it's so bizarre and weird and I don't know what he's doing. And like, it's kind of boring that you're just carrying like boxes around, and just like, I never really heard from someone who said that same stuff, but was just like, but that's all a good thing. Like in that flower, sun and rain and it is a lot of carrying boxes around, and I'm making myself kind of stick to mainline on the story. I don't want to get off the rails, like trying to deliver every single crate I find. And there's no doubt that, I heard people talking about how just like the combat is way better in the second game, because they just give you like non-lethal grenade launchers and assault rifles and stuff like that, because you can't kill people or else they nuke the environment. So you cannot kill other people in this. And the stealth is the worst consequences of getting caught in a stealth game, that I've ever experienced. It, like, when you get caught by like the BTs are like the weird ghost shadow things that show up when it rains. And like, if they catch you and they grab you, they then like drag you around, like your shit gets dropped everywhere. The whole land gets inky and some like big inky creature pops up to like make your life miserable and chase you around. And
back to that bubble bobble.
It's literally a whale. It's kind of like a squid whale at the beginning.
I didn't know it changed. I had seen it.
I don't remember what I think the more recent thing was more like a tiger as I moved on. Because I did fight the whale thing and dealt with that whale squid and dealt with that situation.
No, a bob box, the squid.
So. Whale.
Yes.
And I am mostly playing this on my Steam Deck just because, and it doesn't, you know, it runs fine. It runs okay. It definitely is a thing where I'm like, maybe I'm playing some of this like on my PC, but I definitely didn't want to take up like the living room TV with dragging boxes around this environment and stumbling around. But there is something, you know, that's just relaxing about doing that, even though it's kind of tedious. It's like I could sit down for, you know, a half hour on the Steam Deck and like make some delivery. Getting some stuff done, like trying to pull the world back together and trying to piece together like whatever the hell is going on with this story where you have a baby strapped to your chest and you have some connection to this inky other world. And after you, take a shit or a piss, it gives you bombs filled with your urine or poop, you have blood grenades. You can shoot people with your blood because you have special blood that is different than other people's. And you see
visions of Mads Mikkelsen talking to the baby after you rest in your room.
Dream logic. There's dream logic.
Yeah. And like, you know.
Oh, yeah. What I keep coming back to is delivering things sounds satisfying. Like, delivering things sounds satisfying, and all the weirdness seems done in a way that isn't hampering my enjoyment of delivering
things. Yeah. So, like,
it sounds so fun.
Moments that are kind of frustrating, for sure.
Cat alert.
She needed attention.
It's definitely just like trying to get to the bottom of like whatever is going on, and like, you know, Hideo having to capture faces of like all these famous people just to plug into his game.
Nicholas Refn is in there somewhere, I know. Yeah. Director of Drive and others.
It sounds indulgent, but in the best way.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm chugging along. I still have a lot of the game to go for, and there's like 16 chapters, though I'm hoping that some of those will be shorter than others. And we'll see. Obviously, I still have a lot. See where I'm at by the end of it. But it one of the thing is like trying to get out of kind of the early area is I think important to one's enjoyment, because like once you're like, really, it feels like a large area, but it's like it's kind of like four or five different like stations between them. But like once you cross like this body of water and you get to this more open area and you start expanding the network, you start seeing the things that other people have built. Once you get over there, it's like, oh, there's a road that like spans out across, so you can just drive down the road, and then you start contributing materials to like build more roads, and you can see like basically once you start seeing neat. Other that's what makes the game cool. And
I didn't know there was a Nobi boy built into it.
There's like a whole asynchronous like multiplayer thing into it, like not unlike what you see in Souls games, where it's like, oh, like things that people have made to traverse the environment, you will see in your game, like ladder ropes and bridges.
I didn't know that was part of Souls. I knew the notes.
Well, it's Souls asking that you see things that other people did. And you know, that's not part of Souls, but it's just like that there's other people, you get a sense of community without actually interacting with anyone, I guess. Like, you know, you can put things in a locker that shared between players, or like you can borrow other players' vehicles, and like once you start getting it, it's like, oh, there's always resource for me at this point. Like it's not like, oh, I made a bike and then I crashed it somewhere and now I have to get girls to make a bike again. It's like, no, somebody else has a bike, I'll just borrow their bike, or I'll take some of their materials and build another bike, or whatever. Just like really the only parts that have been super frustrating for me have been when I've gotten like nabbed in one of those stealth sections and dragged around and just been like, this is just fucking dog shit and I hate it.
I'm also interested in this just as like Hideo's statement, like leaving Konami, going like, this is what I want to do. This is my studio. This is my first game with this studio. This is what you can expect. This is my promise.
Nobody can stop me. And I've heard the second one like is better and makes a bunch of improvements and stuff like that. So that's kind of like, you know, I'm excited if I get to the end of when I get to the end of this, then it's like I can pick up the next one, start checking that one out. But yeah, it's a wild freaking ride.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait. See you in 5-10 years.
Dave, you've been playing anything else that's not Expedition 33?
Just a couple real quick that I want to mention. The other day I found at Goodwill a disc copy of Rare Replay, which I have never owned, and so I'm finally diving into what a lot of people agree is a fantastic retro compilation. Anytime I have easy access to Spectrum games that are pre-configured for a controller and I don't have to mess with keyboard commands, I'm like, Yes.
Right.
Someone's done the work for me. That's a great way for me to play Spectrum games. So yeah, super cool to get to dig into Rare's back catalog. I also picked up on sale something that was on my wish list, Parking Garage Rally Circuit.
Oh yeah, I haven't got to play that yet.
Yeah, I grabbed it for $5. It's so great. I love it so much. This is
that soundtrack is something else.
Oh, that soundtrack is great. This is a Sega Saturn styled racing game in which every track is in a parking garage, and it's a ska soundtrack.
All right. It's great. What was it called?
Parking Garage Rally Circuit.
Garage Rally Circuit. Putting it on my spreadsheet of soundtracks.
Beyond those, every gameplay minute that I can spare has been devoted to Expedition 33. So Weiss, Tim and I talked about, I hit a certain milestone in the game, at which there were some major plot revelations, and I had to text Tim and be like, I'm not sure I'm following what's going on here, but I'm afraid to Google it because I don't want spoilers. This is where I'm at, as far as you understand it. Help me understand what I just witnessed. So we had some good spoiler-free conversations about that. I feel very so I have not beat the game yet, but I'm hopefully in the end game, I think, near the end game at the very least. Yeah. And
I finished it back in June, I think shortly after we recorded our June episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point I feel pretty confident that I'm pretty certain it's going to be my game of the year this year. I feel really confident in saying that. There may be other games that come along the rest of this year, but like, I love this game so much. I love the characters. I love the world. And it's hard to talk about because you really do have to talk around a lot of it.
I'm guessing there's a Frog Fractions-y below the surface.
It's just a really good, interesting fantasy story with twists and that takes some twists and turns as a good fantasy story would. And I wouldn't want to spoil any moment because a lot of really great, unexpected stuff happens. It's also hard for me to articulate what I like about it without directly comparing it to Metaphor ReFantazio and sort of directly juxtaposing like what clicked, the things that are clicking for me in Expedition 33 that specifically did not in a game like Metaphor. And so I think it's part of it is that there is an internal
I think Expedition 33, like Metaphor, does well in circles of people who already like those kinds of games and play those kinds of games on the regular. But Expedition 33 has like mechanics and momentum and a cat and writing in a world and all the shit that it does, like punches through to like people who would still never get into Metaphor at all. It's catching a much broader audience than these games usually do, because it's just doing everything so well. And I think, it looks awesome, but it's, you know, the combat is very engaging in like an action gamey sort of way. Like you feel you're very involved in it. You're not just picking commands and they go in and it happens.
Yeah.
And it all looks super cool and feels like really good.
Yeah. It is. Well, so that's the thing, is that all of the art direction and the environments are wildly varied and wildly creative, but in a way that feels way more internally consistent than Metaphor does. To me, a lot of the like character design and world design in Metaphor feels like a patchwork of a lot of different ideas. Whereas this Expedition...
Oh, well, actually, to the point of like Metaphor applying to people who generally like those games, Lauren tried it and was completely turned off.
Oh, okay.
And I think maybe part of it had to do with like that, with how the world was constructed, and that like it felt it didn't like gel really well for her.
Yeah. And the other thing that occurs to me is that Metaphor is that sort of a commonly used RPG of like, this is a team of strangers that meet each other along the way and become a team, you know, over the course of the game. Whereas Expedition 33 starts off with these people all knowing each other and having existing relationships. And it's through those existing relationships that we get our hook into caring about these characters, because they have perspectives. They have a reason for interacting with the characters in a certain way already. And so, like, oh, you are an existing person with an existing life and an existing perspective. And that just makes it a lot easier to get behind a lot of characters' motivations. Tim, I do have one more question. I was going to pivot, so you go first.
Yeah, not to annoyingly make apply improv to everything, but like the characters knowing each other thing is to save time too, right? Because if they don't, then you have to spend all of that time setting that up and you're just waiting for a thing to happen. Like it's efficient. And I wish games did it more often.
That's
it.
Speaking of people knowing each other and things happening, there are romance options in this game, and Tim, I want I wanted to ask you again in the most spoiler-free way that I can. It seems like it feels like there are multiple romance options, but so far the game is only presenting me with one. And to be
so the other one doesn't the other one doesn't come up unless you've denied the first one, and like it doesn't. She doesn't come at it till later. It's like that kind of like little social.
Then I'll buy my time.
Is like a little Is like a little half baked.
I was going to say, to say the least. I don't like only having one option.
Yeah,
that almost feels worse than having none.
Yeah, you do need the one is definitely comes after it like a little bit earlier on, and you need to turn her down until you like finish the side quest for the other.
Okay.
And
then, that's actually where I'm at right now. So, all right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Dave, really hyped for some off-screen boning.
I was starting to feel like, though, I personally feel like Lune is one of the most ravishingly beautiful women I've ever seen in a video game. It started to really feel like Verso and Ciel were having this chemistry that I was having trouble denying. Like, they actually seem to really like each other. Even though this isn't what I would choose necessarily, maybe this is right for them. So I'm feeling deeply conflicted about it. Either way, it's good. And yes, it is half-baked, but also it's so, I don't know, it's not really that important. It's just an extra thing that you don't really have to. That's the thing. You
should.
Do not need to explore these socials. It really is super optional.
Well, the thing is, though, like, I want to talk to these characters at camp. They're all cool.
I know. Like, I like them talking all. I want to see what they all have to say, especially Minoko.
SK and Minoko rule hard, those two guys.
Those dudes.
They're ridiculous.
I love all these dudes.
Like that freaking conversation when you're getting Minoko to join your party is
hilarious.
So fucking funny.
So funny.
It's hysterical.
And that's the other thing I love about this game. It is not afraid to be goofy, but that goofiness is so earned. That goofiness is earned by like lots and lots of just really serious commitment to making sure that these are whole, fully fleshed out characters and fully fleshed out human beings who can joke around every now and then.
Yeah. Even though the game is very dire most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those
like,
moments
that's one of the striking
are...
things is that like, you know, right off the bat, like once you set out on the expedition, it's like, it feels like this world could kill you at any moment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it is fucking dangerous out there.
Even lets you go to areas, then all of it, and like text comes up and says like extreme danger or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Yep. Don't go here like, yet.
Don't go
you
here
can,
yet.
You
will get smoked.
Yeah.
But yeah, the point at which you are at, Dave, so I assume that you are now you're now in Act 3 and you're going around and doing side stuff.
Yeah.
I told you not to.
Yeah.
So you
literally a promise to Lune. I promised her we'd find her parents' expedition.
I feel you. Yeah, you can do a couple things. It's fine. Because Act 3 is literally like all of the extra side quest stuff in the world. And the one thing you need to do is go to Lumiere.
Okay.
Like... That is the final dungeon. and everything else is optional.
All right.
But okay. Now that, you know, you can get around the way you can get around, now you explore. Like,
now's
all
the
that
time
stuff.
To explore. Yeah. Yeah.
Now you can. But like most people are just like, don't do too much. Just go do Lumiere and then muck around with everything else. But it's hard not to.
I know.
Like, just kind of poke at some stuff and just get like a little bit in there.
Cause the world is cool and the characters are worth exploring. And that's just, it's good writing, good world design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kept playing like and doing like, I have not done all the side stuff.
Okay.
Nor
do I think I will, you know, I just encountered the Tower of Endless Battles and I'm like,
I've done some of those. You know, I've killed some of those big, I killed the big, like, overworld bosses that were kind of looming for a lot of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
You know, I did all the character side quests. You know, there's the thing is though, there's still cool stuff to check out and like more cool story pieces to like get that fill things in for you. Like it's worth doing like a lot of it, but you know, at a certain point, I'm just kind of like, okay,
it's time to wrap the story up. Stuff.
Yeah, it's well, I had already wrapped the story up and I was just kind of like, okay, I think I'm done picking at this right now. I really like honestly want to replay it from the beginning, but I really want it to come to Switch too. Cause you said the Steam Deck version is pretty compromised. And having played it in its full gorgeous beauty, I'm like, oh, give me this on Switch too. Cause I'm sure that could run it better than a Steam Deck. And like,
it is crazy rare moments, like especially lately in the act breaks where it shows me a pre-rendered cutscene instead of one rendered in engine, and it's this is what the rest of the game is supposed to look like. Ouch! That's really the only time I notice. But like,
yeah, but I'm glad it's not ruining the experience. You're not just like, oh, this looks like poop. But like,
yeah, no, I'm still if it was no, running more poorly, it's running just well enough that it's not ruining the experience. So.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like when you sent me that text like asking for clarity, I was like, it's like when I text you about some like AliExpress retro portable thing. I'm sure on your end, you're just like, oh yeah, but
well, no,
I saw that one that was like $30 this week, or in the last couple of days, but yeah,
it's rare that I also want to go back and re-experience a story like that because the plot takes such twists and turns. It makes you want to go back and be like, wait, so casts everything in a whole different light. Now I want to go back to the beginning, see all the like those first few areas, and be like, oh, so what? What do people know? What are they, there's so much that I want to, back.
What do things mean that I didn't put together before?
Yes. Thank you. That's the better way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's
plenty of that. Yeah. There's so much of that where things get recontextualized kind of after you finish the game and understand more of what's going on.
I assumed that as well, which is why I needed to ask you for spoiler sake.
You do. But like, I mean, you know the most of it at this point. Like, you have most of the pieces of the puzzle. It's just like there's some more, clarity, I guess, and just more stuff to chew on.
Yeah,
I would say. Yeah, I'm interesting to see what ending you choose. There's two endings.
Oh, geez. Okay.
And like, I picked the one and then I went and watched the other and I was like, oh, yeah, I felt like I picked I feel like I made the correct choice. There's a lot of contention in the community over which one is the good or bad ending.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So you'll see when you get there.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see what you choose.
Yeah.
But they're both interesting, but one of them is
Wii Switch handheld. Something. Did you see that was only $30?
That's a good price. I know it was AliExpress. That's all I know. Yeah, I did not look into
the cheapest one that I picked up. Oh yeah, this is a good one.
I mean,
he's gone. Look, we lost him.
I think I got this one. I think this one was. I think maybe I paid $25 for this one.
It might be that.
This is the Battle XP, and it's by Anbernic. So it's by the high quality manufacturer, but it's their budget line. So it slices out some of the less used features. So it's a high quality but super budget device.
Gotcha. And well, if I find it before the podcast ends, I'm scrolling Wario 64 to see. But
the battle XP.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I think that is. Oh, shit. It's not. What? No, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Any other
six that is what I'm looking at.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's like $35. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep, it's that thing.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Yeah, it's very good.
That's, I think that's it.
Yeah. I think that's
yeah. That's all I got.
Went long. That was a beefy ep.
It was.
So
yeah, we knew it. It wasn't as yeah. I was worried, as I said, to put constraints on. We just didn't know how.
Yeah, no, it's all good. There's a lot to cover. Yeah, that's gonna do it for this month. We'll catch y'all next month at some point.
Yow.
Probably not towards the beginning, but we'll see. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.